Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Tuesday. Yeah, man. Tuesday morning. Yeah, two for Tuesday, man. Yeah. You can get your requests in now, one artist, two songs, on this Tuesday morning, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call or text if you want to be a part of the show. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, one of my favorite people on the planet, the lovely, my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo, is going to join us. She is on the new show, Perpetual Grace Limited. And it will premiere on Sunday, this Sunday night, June 2nd on Epix. And we're going to talk to Dana about the show and much more. And she's awesome. So she's coming up in just a few minutes. We are going to talk about every state's grossest food that people actually like. We have some mascots that people inexplicably thought were a good idea. And the best TV pilots of all time. And more, all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. So that's coming up here on our Tuesday. It feels like a Monday, but it is a Tuesday. It just that's because yesterday we had the day off, so now I'm all screwed up. I don't know what's going on. So well, anyway, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio is here on 720 WGN. Let's say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I am good. How are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Excited to have my future ex-wife on.
She is delightful.
She is a delight.
Oh, my gosh.
Dana DiLorenzo. She is just fantastic. People know her, Kelly Maxwell from Ash vs. Evil Dead, and so many other things. She was also a regular on Craigie Fergie's show. For a while, I got to work with him, and so and she's my future ex-wife, so it's always a lot of fun to have her. Her new show is called, it's getting really great reviews, Perpetual Grace is the new show with an incredible cast, and I know that she's very excited about being on it, and so we're going to talk to her a little bit in just a few minutes. So there you go. All right, did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, it was actually really nice. Got to see the whole family. To do the graduation party thing. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. I wish the weather was a little bit better, but
oh,
I know.
I just is it ever going to stop raining ever? And there's more rain in the forecast.
I'm really glad I started on my arc earlier this year. You know?
Man, oh man, it's ridiculous. All right, let's get into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Pretty good. Well rested. I worked on Memorial Day, so last night I went home and jumped in bed because I only got 3 hours sleep Sunday, so I was a little tired. So I think I slept about 9 hours less.
Wow.
Today, rather.
Seems like you needed
yesterday,
it.
Yesterday, I should say. Yeah. Well rested.
Yeah, you certainly did need it. So, good weekend otherwise, then, Vic?
Yep. Yeah, good weekend. I'm trying to think. Oh, yeah. Brian and his wife Jess came down, Jeannie's brother and her sister-in-law. So we spent the day with them and Jeannie's mother, Sandy. So, yeah, it was fun. We went around to Maggie Daly Park, Grant Park, restaurants. So it was nice.
Nice. All right. Good weekend then. All right. Restful weekend for a lot of people, I would imagine. Yeah, I was disappointed with the I thought the Cubs were actually going to win that game yesterday. I really did. those two home runs, back-to-back home runs at the very end of the game, I was like, okay, this could be fun. But they didn't win.
Yeah. Whenever you get two back-to-back dingers, you know, it's like, okay, so this is going to be a rally then. This is going to be a massive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Houston's a great team though. So it's, you know, but yeah, they need to start winning more games. A little disappointed.
I'm sure that's what the coach told them after.
That's probably exactly what they
Madden
said.
Good advice for you guys.
I guess, I think you should win some more games.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, but I think this team should win some more games.
When that guy throws that little white ball at you, hit it.
Hit it. Try and hit it. That's what we hit it to where there is no one standing.
Perfect.
That's how you play the game. I was born to be a coach, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Speaking of baseball, one of my favorite Chicago Cubs of all time passed away. Bill Buckner. He was only 69, and I don't know. He's truly one of my favorite Cub players of all time, Bill Buckner. We're just very, 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 very sad that he passed away. One of the things that irks me about the coverage of Buckner's death, the Chicago Sun-Times, you know, in covering Buckner's death, the photo that they used, you know, for the piece about Buckner was the photo of the ball going between his legs in the 1986 World Series. And I actually find that unforgivable. But you know what I mean? That they would use that photo. You know, I mean, the guy was a great ball player. There's just no question about it. And unfortunately, that mishap in the World Series in 1986 is one of the things that he's most known for. But that should not be the thing that people remember him for. And that should not be the photo that should have run in a newspaper talking about him and, you know, and his obit and his life. There was a lot more to Bill Buckner than just that ball going between his legs. A lot more. And he had to live with that. You know what I mean? Like, he had to live with that moment. And he had a good sense of humor about it. They did, like, two episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm. He starred on two episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm where they talked about it. They made jokes about it. I just think it's really unfortunate that that's the thing that most people, you know, remember Bill Buckner for. Bill Buckner was a great guy and one of my favorite Cubs of all time. And I'm really saddened that he passed away. And he did so much more than just drop the, you know, the have the ball go between his legs in 1986. There's just a lot more going on. He was a great player. Spent. What is it, 8 seasons with the Cubs? And he played for like 20-something years. He was in the leagues for about 20-something years. Always one of my favorites when I was growing up. I love the guy. He was only 69 years old, and he had dementia. And it's sad. It's really, really sad. But I think we should remember him for what a great guy he was and what a very, very, very good baseball player he was, and not for the dribbler between the legs in 1986. It's unfortunate that, you know, and I couldn't believe that they ran that photo. Like, this is a story about Bill Buckner, his obit. Here, look at this. Here's a picture.
Makes no sense.
It makes no sense at all. So anyway, we'll always remember Bill Buckner, one of my favorite players, and rest in peace. So anyway, all right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo, is going to be here, and we're going to talk about her new TV show, Perpetual Grace, which premieres on Sunday night, and that's coming up right after we take this break here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. I'm always thrilled to welcome my next guest to the show. She's one of my favorite humans on the planet, and she's my future ex-wife. And she is currently starring in Perpetual Grace LTD, or maybe it's limited. We'll have to figure that one out. But she was in Ash vs. Evil Dead. She's been on the show several times. She's one of our favorites, and she's Dana DiLorenzo. Dana, how are you?
My future ex-husband, the king of the airwaves. How are you, Nick?
I'm good. I'm good. It's good to hear you. Good to hear your voice.
I know you, too. Oh. I'm a little hoarse today because it's, like, shockingly, like, a little Chicago cold in Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, we've had about, I don't know, 75 inches of rain in the past, like, 3 days. It's been,
it
just won't stop raining.
You guys have had a hell, I mean, between that and, like, the negative 60 in the winter that I was really not that sad that I wasn't there for. But I was sad that I lost my title of, like, oh, I survived the coldest winter in Chicago when it was only, like, negative 40. Like, 10
yeah.
I mean, you guys.
We had.
But that's why Chicagoans are the best. That's, you survive all this crap.
We had the, you know, they called it the polar vortex, Dana. And it was, it was unbelievable. That's all I'm saying. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, how you been?
Man.
How you been?
I'm better now that I'm talking to you.
Oh,
how are you?
I'm good. Well, I'm better now that I'm talking to you.
Well, look at this love fast. It's like no time at all has gone by at all.
Oh,
at
man.
All.
So you were traveling around for a while, and now you're back in LA, right?
I am, yes, back in LA. I was in New Mexico, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and surrounding desert areas without any Wi-Fi or reception that were haunted. When I was shooting Perpetual Grace for on and off since like November, and yeah, now I'm here, and I'm here, there, everywhere. But I'm coming. I hope to come back. You know, I always love coming to Chicago in the summer because I tell people who haven't been there that it's the happiest place on earth. Like, truly in the world, Chicago in the summer is the happiest place on earth. Everyone, like, skips down the street, and birds are, it's like a Disney film.
Yeah.
Because and it just makes you happy. It's infectious. So well, I hope to get there this summer, and I'll come say hi.
You have to come back to Chicago. I miss you.
I miss you, too. I always come back at least once a summer.
Okay.
I can't stay away. Can't stay away from you, and I can't stay away from the architectural tour. Down to Center of the River. I'm local for 10 years, and I'm like, I have to do it every year. It's my favorite thing.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
You're like, yeah, well, that's lame. I'm not going to be doing that with you, Dana. But you be my guest and call me when you're done.
So
we still have to eat Potbellies together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Remember?
Yeah.
Don't you live near one or something?
I live a Lou Malnati's and a Potbellies.
Oh, my favorite.
Both of them, yes. 900 feet away from my front door.
That's all I want to do is eat food with you in Chicago.
Okay,
can we call that a date? Is it happening?
We'll call it a date. Absolutely.
We really kind of pick up our pace if you're going to be my future ex-husband, as you call me your future ex-wife. We really kind of, we got to go through those motions if we want to get to that point.
I think we do. Yeah, I think we do. So, now let me ask you a question. Is it limited or an LTD, Perpetual Grace?
You know, I actually, the Perpetual Grace, it's pronounced limited, but like, I think they're saying LTD because the name of the church that is owned by the people, Ma and Pa, who are played by Sir Ben Kingsley and Jackie Weaver, it's called Our Lady of Perpetual Grace.
Oh, okay.
And it's but it's also a company, which is part of the whole the scheme and the whole layout of the show. But that is, I think, I don't know. What do you think sounds better? Perpetual Grace, Perpetual Grace Limited, Perpetual Grace LTD.
I think it's either way. It sounds pretty cool.
I mean,
it's a very original type. But, hey, by the way, I don't know if you are aware of this, right? That you were on Svengoolie just past Saturday.
Yes, he messaged me, and I was so honored to have a replay of that. I love him.
Yeah.
We hung out with him, you and I, last time I was in Chicago.
Yeah, that was at the Flashback.
He's the coolest.
The Flashback convention.
Yes.
He interviewed you, and they ran it. They ran it again on Saturday night. It was just.
I am honored. No, because I didn't get to have access to it. So I tried. I've tried many a time.
Yeah.
My friends are taping it. I have a few friends that taped it for me. But I loved all of it. I felt like I finally got my cool card when I got to talk to him. Finally.
Yeah, he's the best. He's the best.
He's the best.
Yeah, he is. All right, so let's talk about this Perpetual Grace, Dana. Tell
me,
now I've had Steve on the show a few times back.
Stephen Conrad, the creator. Yes.
Yes.
The genius that is Stephen Conrad.
He is a lovely man, and he actually, wrote and directed one of my favorite movies of like the past like 15 years, and it's The Promotion. With
someone was just saying that the other night that was their favorite movie.
Sure.
Yeah, that's great. That's such, isn't that great?
John C. Reilly and Sean William Scott. It's just such a great movie.
I know.
And my good friend Tony Fitzpatrick.
Right. I always forget that you're friends. Yes. Yeah. And he's on. He plays probably one of the. I mean, they're all great roles, but I love him in Patriot.
Oh yeah, he's great. And that's a great show too. That's also another Steve. So how did the part in Perpetual Grace come to you, Dana?
Well, and I will tell you, but I have to say this before I forget. I need to manage expectations. I am not starring in it. I'm not even a series regular. I'm just, first of all, happy to blink on this show. I'm not even kidding. I'm so excited for people to see the show. I have a very small recurring role. I'm not in every episode. I want to just manage expectations. It's not, you know, Kelly and Asher's Evil Dead. But I have to tell you that I am so thrilled to even be a part of it in some, like, I would have been an extra. I'm not even kidding. It's that good of a show. Mm. But how it came to be, I guess, is because Stephen Conrad is a Chicago guy as well, as the co-creator, Bruce Paris. And I actually worked with Stephen Conrad like 10 years ago on a pilot he wrote and directed for his brother. Now, I don't know if I'm sure you know this, but on Patriot, his brother, the brilliant Chris Conrad, plays Dennis. And in this show, he plays New Leaf. And it's incredible because when you have Stephen writes for his brother, unlike what anyone else could do. I mean, obviously, when you have a sibling, and you can write to know, like, exactly what their wheelhouse is. And the two of them together are just unstoppable. So I'd worked on this pilot way back when with pretty much half of the supporting roles in Patriot, because Stephen Conrad is that kind of person that if you are a good person and you're fun to work with or easy to get along with and you are, you know, do your job, he takes you everywhere. So, I will say to anyone out there who's a fan of Patriot.
Yeah.
Most of those people, I mean, pretty much the entire cast is in this as well. And it's incredible because then you create this environment that is just such a fun, supportive, wonderful, zero ego place to work and be. And I never wanted to leave. In fact, I started pretending I worked at craft services just so I can hang around on set because it was that fun. So, Stephen and I sort of kept in contact over the years and a little bit here and there, but not really. And then he reached out and said, hey, I'm writing this role and I think you'd be great for it. And I thought to myself, like, okay. If I'm lucky enough, sure. And turns out, there it is. And they got the call and got the offer, and I was so excited. And as it went along, it was supposed to just be a very, very, very little part. And then he ended up writing some more scenes, and I got to do some more, like, some beautiful things that he wrote that are so fun. And I'm very excited because Ash vs. Evil Dead fans will be pleased to hear that not only is the show itself Hitchcock inspired, like there was, you know, director's notes in there that said a Hitchcock close up. So I call it it's kind of its own thing. Nothing's been done like this before, I don't think. But it's a Hitchcock-inspired dark comedy thriller with soul, is how I'm personally describing it. Mm-hmm. But then, so that, I think that's something to be said. But also, the joy, Nick, I you might be shocked by this, but my character, Valerie Spoons, has a filthy mouth.
Oh.
How exciting. You know I love that.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Yeah, and so the show is, it's so many things, but it's basically about this whole team. It's like, they're calling it like a TV noir. And it's sort of this like Russian doll that as it unravels, it gets more and more connected and complicated and surprising. Like, it's one of those things when the episode ends, you're like, what happens? Like, no, I need to know. It keeps you hooked every episode. And it's all of these characters who are basically, they're all survivors of some trauma. And you find out that as that goes along. But they're all kind of having this existential crisis. And what ends up coming out of that is this con job. That is where Jimmy Simpson, he's brilliant in this, beyond brilliant, gets roped into this scheme that Damon Harriman, who plays Paul, and I play Damon Harriman's girlfriend, to get money back, to steal money from Damon's parents, who are Sherman Kingsley and Jackie Weaver, because they run this church and they take advantage of all these people and steal their money. And Jimmy had a traumatic experience, and Damon and all these people, they want to steal the money back. Basically, it's the story of Robin Hood. How about we just say that?
Okay.
It's like Robin Hood stealing from the bad people to give to the good people. But the problem, as you might guess, is that, you know, when you are manipulating, even when they're bad people and you're trying to do the right thing and you want to do the right thing for someone you love or someone you're indebted to, whatever it is, but when you do that, you inevitably hurt someone else.
Right.
And then that becomes a domino effect.
All right. Well, Dana, hang on, okay?
Oh, God, I'm already cut off.
No. We have to take a break, okay?
I'll take a breath while you take a break.
All right, you do that. All right, there's Dana DiLorenzo, I love her so much. And the show is called Perpetual Grace Limited. And it premieres on Sunday night, June 2nd, on Epix, E-P-I-X. Check your cable provider. I've got it. I subscribe to it because Dana's on the network, so I have to. That's just what happens. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk with more with Dana DiLorenzo right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Tuesday morning, and we're here till 5 a.m. Two for Tuesday. Get your request in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. My guest right now is Dana DiLorenzo. You know her from Ash vs. Evil Dead and so many other things, and she's now currently going to be starring on Perpetual Grace Limited, which premieres on Sunday, June 2nd, on Epix. And let's get Dana back onto the show. Hey, Dana.
Oh, hi, Nicky.
Hi.
Did you miss me?
Yeah, of course I missed you. Of course. I miss you all the time. You know that.
I miss you all the time.
Hey,
you have such a great voice. Has anyone ever told you that you have a great voice?
That I should be in radio, you think?
You should be in radio. What do you think? I mean, I know you used to be artistic directors, you know, and of theaters and all these wonderful things, but you really nail it.
You think so? You know,
I know.
I gotta tell you, oddly, this past Saturday was my 34th anniversary with WGN.
Oh my goodness! How happy anniversary, man!
Thank you.
That's huge.
Yeah,
34 years, man. That's insane.
Isn't that crazy?
In radio, no less. That's hard to do.
Oh, it is.
That's hard to do, baby. Congratulations.
And thank you.
Wow.
I appreciate that. That was just past Saturday. So, I'm really looking forward to seeing this show because everything about it seems really intriguing to me, and I've seen all the commercials for it and everything. And you know, I got to tell you, Dana, it's not a bad cast.
I mean, Sherman Kingsley, he's okay.
Yeah.
No, truly, I mean, I can't say enough about this show. And even the ones that you're not seeing in the trailers or the clips. But the main cast, and like, by the way, you know, you're going to fall in love with, I think he's like 14 in real life. His name is, first of all, he's a 14-year-old kid named Dash. It's his real name.
Really?
Dash Williams. And he plays he's so phenomenal and holds his own with all of these magnificent cast of characters. Like I said, Ben Kingsley, Jackie Weaver, Jimmy Simpson, Damon Harriman, who, by the way, Damon Harriman is playing Manson in Tarantino's new show. Yeah.
Yep.
So, like, all of these people, Hannah Mae Lee, Kurtwood Smith, Terry O'Quinn. So they're both on. Terry O'Quinn was John Lakeman's dad in Patriot. Kurtwood was Leslie.
Yeah.
And also
Louis Guzman.
Oh, did I forget my boy Louie? Louie, who I play Lovers with.
Yeah.
As part of this whole scheme. Oh my God, Louie is that guy who's in everything.
He's in my favorite movie of all time. You know that.
Which is what again?
Magnolia.
Oh my God, that's right.
Magnolia is my favorite movie of all time, and he's in Magnolia.
Oh, he's in literally everything. I mean, but in this particularly, and most I had. So many scenes with him, I can tell you firsthand, he will break your heart. He will break your heart in this, and then he'll also make you laugh the hardest. I mean, I really, you know me, I don't BS, Nick.
Yeah.
It's that good.
Yeah.
Honestly, I love you that you subscribe to Epix and are watching it for me, but like I said, I'm not starring in it. I have a recurring role. I'm like in the, I think maybe the couple first scenes of the first episode, and then my character like pops in sporadically. I'd say like right in the middle of the season, she really has this moment,
mm-hmm.
And you kind of learn what she's about, and so I'm sprinkled throughout, and then in the finale, so you'll see it. But it's one of those things like right when you're like, whatever happened to that character? Boom, then she comes back in. But this cast of characters, you said, this cast in general, phenomenal. The writing is beyond anything. I've never binge read scripts in my life. I binge read it. Like, it was that good.
Yeah.
And it's perfect because it's not one of those shows that's like super hard to follow, even though it's very involved. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's not one of those where you're like, wait, what happened? Is it like there? Anytime there is a flashback, Stephen and Bruce chose to make it in black and white. So you know if you're watching something in black and white, it's a flashback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you'll see. It's really just such a phenomenal show. And anyway, this kid Dash Williams is 14, and he plays this awkward kid that is just so damn funny. Nick, you're gonna love this kid. He's so
awesome.
So funny.
Yeah.
And Michael Chernus, by the way, who I think I forgot to mention him. It's incredible. Everybody in this. But I love it because right when it's about to get super dramatic or super serious, before it gets to that point, the pendulum swings right to the other side, and it makes you laugh.
Yeah.
And it's such a, but it's a dark laugh. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it goes back to, and it's a thriller, and it's all the things. It's all the things. It's murder. It's a it's all of it.
And I got to tell you, I'm such a fan of Jimmy Simpson's. I think he's so great. And you know, I've loved him since It's Always Sunny.
Yeah.
He's so hilarious on that. But you know what? He was terrific in. I mean, he's been great in everything. But
in everything.
That Biggie, the Tupac.
Oh.
He was so good in that. I mean,
Nick, wait till you see him in this. Wait. I mean, that's another guy like Louie, where he's also literally in everything. He's one of the hardest working guys in show business. He always plays, like, this article just came out in Vanity Fair, where he, like, always plays these, like, offbeat, sort of quirky characters. And in this, I didn't breathe. They're an hour long. There's 10 episodes in the season. We just had our premiere, and I saw the first episode, and I knew I already had high expectations. I knew it was going to be brilliant because I got to also shadow Stephen as a director for a week or two, and so I watched a lot of it that I wasn't even in. But then seeing it, all of a sudden my abs hurt because I was not breathing. I was like clenched.
Yeah,
because it's that good.
That's good.
And Jimmy, can I just read this to you? Stephen Conrad tweeted this today. This also says a lot about, you know how great Stephen is.
Yeah.
But this is what the writer, director, said, the creator of the show said. Jimmy is a dream. He's an artist and a pal, and he's a gentleman. Here's something about him because there's something about him.
Ah.
And I think that's so, I mean, you see, it's so poetic and fabulous. The Biggie thing, oh, wait till you see this.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I can't wait. It's going to be so good.
So much without saying a word. That's,
you know,
as a woman of many, 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 many words, I respect somebody that can just say it all.
Right.
Without a damn word.
You know, it's really funny, Dana, is I've been, you know, obviously I follow you on the Twitters and on the Facebooks and all that stuff. And I saw some of the pictures that you posted at the premiere, and I believe my favorite picture favorite picture is you embarrassing yourself in front of Ben Kingsley and his wife.
Yeah.
Right. Which is just one of the most wonderful pictures that I've seen. And it's like Ben Kingsley is like touching your arm going, it's okay.
I think he actually, can I tell you, he was touching my arm because I kept touching him. You don't touch your Ben. It's not from him. Like he has no ego whatsoever. I've worked with like, you know, college kids that had more of an ego than he did. But like, I kept touching him and his wife. Like you know, I'm Italian. I touch people.
Yeah.
But like, this was, you would have told me to stop touching you. That's how much I was touching him. And I think he grabbed my arm to be like, could you stop? Just pounding my chest. Could you stop, you insane woman? And this is how that whole night, I kind of blacked out. He came up and said something kind to me. I don't even remember. Because I don't know why. He has a presence that you will not believe, and it comes through on camera. But like, in person, I mean, I'm not going to, don't tell him this, but like, I've never even seen Gandhi. Let's not, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like he's my favorite actor. I respect him, but there's something, he comes up to you, and I'm just like, how about you read that, blah, blah. And I blacked out, like, I had like a stressful blackout. And so all I know is, this is how my friends described it, who took that picture. I was like, why didn't you save me? They're like, oh, you talked to him for a solid 20 minutes. I'm like, I never even spent more than 3 seconds with the man. I don't know what you mean. Why didn't you save me? They're like, well, you look, you know, they looked entertained. And I was like, they're like, what did you say? I'm like, honestly, I had such a, like a mental block. I don't remember anything. And they go, well, I kind of believe you because, you know, the first 5 minutes we took the pictures, you were making them laugh. It was going well. You gave him a hug. I'm like, oh God, I gave him a hug. And they're like, oh good. She gave him a hug. The story's over. Oh, she's starting another story. Okay. All right. Okay. Oh, she's going to wrap it up. Wrap it up, Dana. Wrap it up. Oh, and she's touching. Oh, she's giving him a hug. Oh, good. Okay. She's and there's another story. That was my, and they didn't save me. They just laughed and walked
in the bar. I don't know why I'm surprised. I don't know why I'm not surprised by this story, Dana.
You shouldn't be surprised.
I'm not surprised.
But really, though, of all people, though, I couldn't reel it in.
For Ben Kingsley, yeah.
I've said one thing to him, and it was a line I practiced where I was like, I'm just going to say it's an honor and a privilege. Honor and a privilege for Ben. And I met him when we were on set, and he said, and Steven introduced me to him. He's like, Sir Ben, this is Dana. And I was like, hi, Sir Ben. Like, that's how it came out. And he's like, oh, darling, how are you? And, like, tried to make it okay.
Yeah.
And then I have a 20-minute conversation with him and his wife about God knows what.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
There you go.
And I'm touching him. What has happened?
Yeah. All right, listen.
Nick, where were you to come save me?
I should have been there. I would have helped you.
You're
all right, sure. Dana, hang on, okay?
Okay.
Okay. I love this woman so much. It's sick. Dana DiLorenzo is here, and the show is called Perpetual Grace Limited, and it premieres Sunday, June 2nd on Epics. It's a massive, a great cast, and Dana's a part of that cast, and she's the best. I'm going to take a break, and we'll talk more with Dana right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Let's get back to the conversation with my good friend Dana DiLorenzo, a tremendous actress who you know from Ash vs. Evil Dead, and her latest show is called Perpetual Grace Limited, and it premieres on Sunday, June 2nd on Epics. And let's get Dana back in here. Dana, how are you?
Oh, Nick D, I should talk to you like every day because you just sort of make me feel so good.
Yeah.
So you've always been so supportive. And thank you again. I you know I love you. You're the best.
Oh, well, you know.
34 years on the air and you keep having me on to just, you know, to just punish the air with words. Why are you glutton for punishment?
Oh, listen, you know, the last time that we saw each other was at that weird hotel thing, the Soho.
It's not weird.
It's a weird place. I thought that place was weird, Dana.
Why?
I don't know.
Because they had marshmallows to toast in the fire.
Well,
what do you got against? What do you got against s'mores?
No, I don't have anything against s'mores. It was funny that we had to teach you how to do a s'more.
Okay.
That night.
You know, you don't need it. I mean, come on. Have I not been embarrassed enough? Have I not been self-effacing enough for you tonight?
No.
Yeah.
I thought the place was interesting, but it was just kind of had a weird vibe to it. I don't know why. Is it haunted? Is that place haunted?
I don't know. But my friend who was the manager there was kind enough to get me a fabulous hotel room there last minute for a discount. So I love them.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was, you know, I just thought the place was a little weird, but we did have a good time.
Well, I'll never take you there.
Okay.
It just so happened I was in town for 24 hours, and I was like, I got no time.
Right.
You want to come meet me here? There's like 70 rooms of, like, this is a billiard room, this is a, you know, this restaurant, and there's a rooftop with s'mores.
Yeah.
But how do you get the, I mean, I still guess I thought the chocolate and the graham cracker went on.
Well,
yeah,
you almost put the chocolate in the fire. That's when we had to go.
Because
no.
I wanted it to be melty. Why would you want a squishy damn marshmallow with a hard, cold piece of Hershey?
Yeah. Well, it worked out, though.
It was cold out.
It was chilly.
We got it.
Everything is good.
And then I kind of turned into just like a pyro.
Yeah, you did.
I was like, David's a butthead.
You wouldn't let the fire. You threw another log on the fire. How long we were outside? You threw another log on the fire.
Well, but it was freezing. It was like the winter in Chicago, and there was a fire, and I wanted to be warm.
Those
blankets weren't cutting it, my friend.
No, they weren't. So listen,
I'm sorry, I traumatized you.
No, it's okay. It's all right. So Perpetual Grace coming on this Sunday. Are you working on anything else right now, Dana? Are you working on anything? What do you got going on? Anything else?
Well, right now, some of this won't be televised. I'm doing this. I'm very happy and honored to be part of this Young Playwrights Festival, where I'm one of the actors who's performing one of the 12 plays selected, written by kids aged 9 to 19.
Oh, wow.
And that's going on for the month of June. I think it's just such a cool thing what they do. They fly them out and from all over the country, and so it doesn't matter where you are. If you wrote a play and you submit it and you got picked, let me tell you, this 15-year-old who wrote this play about a couple on a date, Anya Jimenez, I read her play and I was like, I need to rethink my life choices because this 15-year-old is brilliant. What am I doing with my life? Like, she wrote this like a Neil Simon. It's like Neil Simon meets John Patrick Shanley. I'm like, who are you?
Yeah.
So I'm doing that right now. And then, you know, because we're waiting on to hear about season two, the other thing that apparently I just heard this yesterday from the brilliant writer-director Nicole Payone of Friendsgiving that I think you and I talked about.
Yeah.
It apparently just lit up the international sales at Cannes.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, and so she told me that that's it's got a bunch of international sales, but it's going to come out in the States in November.
Okay,
so stay tuned on that too.
All right, very.
And you know, you're when you're a working actor, you're never really working. You're just always trying to find a job. That's the secret.
Yeah,
that's why we're also, you know. But I'm honestly just so I'm just putting all my chips on, hoping we get a season two for Perpetual Grace because it's that good. I just want to be a gopher on that show. So good.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see it. I can't wait to see it on Sunday.
I really can't wait for you either. It's one of the, and you know, it's perfect timing because like people, you can't really compare to anything. I've seen some things come out about it, like, oh, it's a new Breaking Bad. It's not really. I mean, honestly, this is crazy to say, but I think it's even better if you can imagine. But like Game of Thrones is over now, so like I feel like anybody who wants to watch a show that they can sink their teeth into and get hooked, this is the show.
Okay, let's talk a little bit. Do you like doing the conventions? Because we had you here for Flashback this past August, and you know, you Ash vs. Evil Dead. You do a lot of the conventions. Do you have fun doing those?
I love them. You saw me. I mean, I'm like the first one on the floor and the last one to leave.
Yeah.
Because, shocking, I talk a lot.
Yes.
They're the ones like, I have other people to see, woman. And I'm like, no, come, stay with me. I really do. Because, especially for something like Ash, which is, you know, a love letter to the fans. That's how it was created, solely as a love letter to those lifelong fans. So, you know, especially now that it's been off the air for what I think a year now. And I haven't, you know, we haven't shot it for 2 years. So it's always wonderful to go back and to have people still be excited and talk about their favorite scenes or favorite episodes. And that's, you know, I'm passionate about it. And I had, it was a, you know, experience of a lifetime. So then any chance I get to talk to the fans who it was made for, and then I get to be reminded why I was tortured in all the blood and the viscera and guts. It's like, it's like a puppy. Like it's infectious, you know? I love it. And I'm so happy I got to see you and spend some time with you there. And that was so much fun. And you did our panel.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I did
the panel with you and Ray.
And then you hosted the movies, at night.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun.
We got, you know, Bruce is coming this year to Flashback.
And I heard it's like Bruce and Sam.
Bruce, Sam, and Ted.
And Ted.
And,
come on.
Yeah. That's the first, you know.
Well, maybe I should come and crash it.
You should. You can stay in my room. You know that.
Calm down. Tom, are you going to come? Is Tom going to be invited to your room, too? Your
Tom, yeah, Tom will be there. Yeah, don't worry. He's my...
Well, it'll be like Three's Company.
Yeah, it'll be like Three's Company. We'll just... the doors will be slamming, and everything will be, you know, it'll just be like... be Jack Tripper. We'll be Jack Tripper all over the place. Hey, you know, I watched Three's Company the other night. It was the one with the misunderstanding. You remember that one?
Oh, that one. And then there was hilarity ensued, and then that one physical comedy moment.
Yeah, you remember that? The one with the misunderstanding.
And then remember what's her name got mad at what's her name, and then he did, and then, yeah. That
right.
One.
That's exactly
what... Oh, that was the best one.
So, Perpetual Grace, it debuts on Sunday, June 2nd on Epix.
Very quickly around the corner, yeah.
And it is coming up. And now this is the second time that I've subscribed to a cable service because of you. Because I did not have...
My dad is like, what is it with you getting on these shows? I got to subscribe. I use a typewriter.
How's your dad doing, by the way? How's your dad?
Oh, my dad loved meeting you. He's all right. He's doing all right. You know, he's... I might actually be coming back right around Flashback because he always goes to Chicago on his business trip in August. So, but he had the best time at that convention. That was Daddy's first convention. He became... More people wanted his autograph. He was the biggest hit at the thing. Everybody. He was like the Godfather. People were coming up in the ring.
No. He was a rock star, Dana, at Flashback.
He went up to fans. No, Nick, you saw this. He went up to the fans after they'd come up to me and be like, he'd go shake their hand and be like, can I just thank you for watching my daughter's show and for supporting her coming out to see her today? It was the cutest thing. He would go shake the fans and like, thank you. He thought he was my security guard. Oh, he's just my pop.
No, it was a great weekend. It was a great weekend.
But he's doing well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
How is your dad doing? What was his latest joke?
My dad's, I can't remember the last joke that he took. We were off yesterday because normally it's Monday mornings he tells the joke every Monday morning. And we were off yesterday because of Memorial Day.
Oh, right. Aw. Yeah. Well, get him calm. You know, you need a joke today.
You know,
he has to do a double joke since he missed one.
You got to do two jokes the next time. Yeah you got to do two jokes. Yeah, my dad, every single time, you know, like, my dad's like a rock star. Whenever, you know, because you know I host a movie screening every month. I do.
That's right.
And I'm doing Ghostbusters, obviously, because I actually texted you because I said you're my favorite fictional Dana.
And I said, what did I say?
You sent me back. You said that there is no Dana.
There is no Dana, only Zool.
Exactly right. But anyway, my dad is always, you know, he always, like, he's a rock star. Like, at my screenings, like, people come up to him instead of me. And they...
I know. So you get it. It's amazing.
Exactly.
It's so fun to watch, though.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
So, hey, Dana, thank you so much for joining us. We got to...
Oh, Nick, please.
It's got to be more...
Thank you. Yeah. You can't thank me. I have to thank you. I owe, like... I mean, honestly, I should start sending you the checks for 10%. This is, you're like, you always are so kind to me. Yeah. You always are so quick. I really, you know, I love you, and I really appreciate it, though. And you're the best, and congratulations to you again on your 34 years, man.
Yeah. No, cheers. Listen, I got to tell you this really quickly before we let you go. Honest to God, the first time that you came into the studio and we did that really long interview, one of the best interviews I've ever had, one of the most fun times I've ever had, and it's only gotten better since I've gotten to know you.
I would argue that I peaked at that moment, and it's all been downhill. I feel like I've just blown it ever since. Yeah. But no, Nick, you know, I had so much fun at that interview, and we actually owe Ted Raimi a thank you because he's the one that's like, you should talk to Nick D.
Yeah.
And I think of that. That was honestly, Nick, like probably my favorite interview of all time.
Oh.
No, it definitely is.
Well, I appreciate
that.
That.
I really do.
Well, we'll do.
We have to come next time I'm in Chicago. I need to come into studio.
Absolutely.
Again.
Yeah, I fully expect you to be here next week.
All right, done. I'm about to book it now.
Okay. All right, Dana. It's always a pleasure, and I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Thank you, future ex-husband. You know I love you.
Yes, my future ex-wife. All right, there you go. That's Dana DiLorenzo, everybody. I just love her. And Perpetual Grace airs on Sunday, this Sunday, June 2nd, on Epix. And she's the best. And a great cast, and she's part of it. I just love her. So we're going to take a quick break right here on 720 WGN. right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. And it's 2 for Tuesday. You're here 2 for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Tom, who requested the Bangles?
That was our good friend Ike.
Ike. Oh, it's 80s.
There so, it is.
There you go. All right. So welcome back, everybody. And we're going to talk about every state's grossest food that people actually love. So we're going to go to go state by state here and talk about gross foods. So, by the way, Margaret in Bridgeport sent a text that says, I can't wait for Nick to marry Dana. Invite me to the wedding and I will take the photos.
And then divorce her.
Well, she is my future ex-wife.
Right.
So, she says he sounds so happy to be talking with her. I love Dana. Dana and I get along famously. Always will. She's the best. So, and I'm really looking forward to that show. What an unbelievable cast. Man.
Jimmy Simpson was the best part of Westworld for the few episodes that I watched. So I'm glad to see him keeping on going.
He's great. Did you see the Biggie and Tupac?
Yeah.
Miniseries?
I think I watched it because Jimmy Simpson was in it. I was like,
He was so good in it. I mean, he's a terrific actor. And he was hilarious on Sonny.
What's I know he's a McPoyle, but right. He's like Boyle McPoyle or something like that.
those characters, man, way creepy. Just way creepy and very, very funny.
Did you just say we got out of the shower? Were you two in the shower together?
That show, man. How long has that show been on now? It's been on like 11 seasons, I think.
Oh, we're on to season 14.
Season 14? It's been, oh my.
And they're cleared to go through season 16.
I got no problem with that.
And now Glenn Howerton, he's out of
the IP, the AP bio.
Done too soon.
Yeah, I agree. And I was very upset they canceled the Mick. Because I thought the Mick was hilarious. I thought that show was great. And, you know, and the Fox canceled it. So, well, at least, you know, she's still D. Sweet
good
D.
Sweet D.
So, all right. We have every state's grossest food that people actually love. This is from Thrillist.com. every red, white, and blue cranny of America has its culinary quirks rooted in regional tradition or local predilections. And so from Alabama to Wyoming, each state has foods that might look unappetizing or downright disgusting to an outsider, but to homegrown kids, they're a little slice of home. Some have gross names that belie their tastiness. Some have delicious names that belie the fact that you have some dead animal's reproductive organs in front of you, and some are just gross. Hey, if you love them, there's nothing wrong with that. We're not here to judge. So here are the grossest, weirdest food from every state in the U.S. So Alabama, ambrosia salad. You ever have ambrosia salad, Tom?
No, but, I mean, the name makes it sound pretty good. Ambrosia, the nectar of the gods.
Yeah. It says, technically, ambrosia may be the nectar of the Greek gods, but even Zeus might think twice before sticking his lightning bolt into a bowl of this stuff. It's the perfect dish for anyone who believes salads would be drastically better if they got rid of literally all the vegetables and replaced them with a kitchen sink collection of mass-produced sugar bombs. A refrigerated mix of sweetened fruit like canned pineapple and mandarin oranges gets tossed in with mini marshmallows and shredded coconut, as well as a creamy dairy item such as cottage cheese, sour cream, or Cool Whip. It looks like something straight out of the 70s dinner party that probably gave all the people in attendance food poisoning.
Yeesh.
You know, there's a lot of weird stuff. A lot of weird food stuff in the 60s and the 70s. And a lot of them, it's amazing to me, if you go back and you look at some of these old, like, weirdo recipes from the 60s and so forth, how much Jell-O molds are involved. There's seriously, like, there's like a, there's like, every recipe had some sort of gelatin in the 60s. And it just, if you go back and look at these old recipes, everything had Jell-O or gelatin involved.
What was the cause of that? Just Jell-O was really popular?
Yeah, it was. And all these recipes, you know, I don't even know where they came from. We talked about this years ago on the show where it was like, why was there so much gelatin, you know, used in the 60s and the 50s and 60s? Like every recipe, if you look up, like if you were like to Google like old recipes from the 60s, you'd be shocked at just how much Jell-O or gelatin was involved. I mean, some of these recipes were just disgusting.
I'm guessing there was some meat gelatin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. They would put, and it would be inside the Jell-O. Like meat would be inside the Jell-O.
Why?
Oh, yeah. You know, they had a vegetable flavored Jell-O. Yeah, that's a real thing.
Like a little broccoli Jell-O.
There would be. Well, I know that they had celery Jell-O, which is like, what's the point? But no, there was vegetable. There was vegetable flavored Jell-O, which was a thing. But ambrosia salad. It's a very strange thing. So this is from Alabama. But yeah, I mean, you look at this and this is definitely one of those, you know, one of these salads that was probably, you know, thought of in the 60s for sure. Alaska, a toucat, sometimes called Eskimo ice cream. The origins involve no actual dairy because Western Alaska's rough territory for cattle farming. And it's really hard to milk a seal. The original version of the stuff was essentially a mixture of seal and or other animal fats like moose or walrus with whatever wild berries were on hand, though sugar and milk are sometimes added nowadays. We mean no disrespect to the ingenuity and the steadfastness of the native Alaskan people. But you got to work with what you got. But when we say Ben and Jerry's probably isn't rushing to get a flavor of this anytime soon, even if the Alaskan friends who've sampled the stuff assure us that it's quite decent.
That's a lot of animal fat.
Yeah. All right. How about Arizona? Mesquite pods. That doesn't sound right. Mesquite pods. While taking in the stark beauty of the Arizona desert, you might notice some of the vegetation appears to have 8-inch-long chartreuse-colored spiders crawling out of its branches. Not only are these little wormy monsters harmless legumes, they're actually edible. And more importantly, they, especially the honey mesquite variety, taste like organic Skittles. You can pop them right off the branch and eat the pods, just like jumbo green beans, or mash them into a fine powder to make flour, jelly, or even cocktails with. Skittles do grow on trees, only they're a little uglier. The only catch is that the alien that eventually hatches inside your stomach, yeah, if you eat more than three. Mesquite pods.
Yeah, come on, let's have a pod cocktail.
Arkansas buffalo ribs. That doesn't sound bad.
I'd be down for buffalo.
Driving in the Ozarks, you're going to run into a catfish joint or two, and many will serve buffalo ribs. If you're wondering where the hell the buffalo roam in Arkansas, you'll need to look underwater. They're actually the ribs of the buffalo fish. The ribs look like they were pulled straight from an enormous animal, maybe a dinosaur, which is a tad disconcerting considering that they're a freshwater fish. If you can get over the looks, you'll be treated to a fried and flaky whitefish. It's strange that the state with so damn good normal barbecue ribs that they would eat ones that were pulled straight from a T-Rex's rib cage and fried. But that's how they roll in the natural state.
They do kind of look like something out of the Flintstones.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They're fried and everything, and they look like almost like fish sticks.
Uh-huh.
But
they're ribs.
They're ribs, and they've got some that have the bone in them, and it honestly looks like something. It sounds like a big rack.
Just like, yeah.
Put on the side.
Put on the side of the car that flips over when Fred orders the big ribs. How about this? Out of California, Goop. Now, you know, when I hear Goop, the first thing I think of is that product that you like Goop is this product that you would use to clean your hands. Like if you were if you're a mechanic and you're working in, you know, you're working with a lot of oil or grease or something, and you're working in a where your hands get really dirty or greasy or oily, this stuff called Goop was what you used to clean your hands. You would see it in factories, and you would see it in garages and stuff. But that's what I think of when I hear Goop. But California is like the entire country encapsulated. There are snow-capped mountains, beaches, deserts, and forests populated by hippies, entrepreneurs, farmers, and celebrities. Naturally, the cuisine is as kaleidoscopic as an acid trip. When it boils down to the grossest culinary tradition, we're going to single out a homegrown movie star and her stab at creating a food empire, Goop. It's aggressively wholesome, nauseatingly all-natural, enragingly clean. The Gwyneth Paltrow brainchild... Oh, that's right. That's where it came from. Gwyneth Paltrow. The Gwyneth Paltrow brainchild, a cookbook, online shop, wellness curator... is a mere symbol of California's gross but healthy trend-humping food scene. From barren bone broths in mason jars to detox systems that could easily be mixed up with Goop's extensive skincare selection, Goop abounds with super expensive Goop. It's enough to make you want to consciously uncouple with your lower intestine, which is also called Goop. They're basically just going after Gwyneth.
Well, let's see. I mean, who names their company Goop?
Gwyneth.
What was her kid's name? Her and Chris Martin. It was Apple.
Apple. Yeah.
Apple. Oh, my God.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break here. If you guys want to talk about bad food that you grew up on, or if you've got gelatin, if you've got some sort of gelatin recipe that you would like to share, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. You hear me? 2 for Tuesday. That was our second Bengals song right there, the remake of the Simon and Garfunkel from the soundtrack of Less Than Zero. You ever see Less Than Zero?
I never saw it, but I read the book.
I didn't read the book. I hated the movie.
Yeah. Well, you don't seem to be a huge fan of Bret Easton Ellis.
Oh, no.
No.
No, no, no. No.
Wait, did you say no?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I actually thought, Robert Downey Jr. was really good in that movie. I thought the movie was bad, but I thought he was really good in it.
Yeah.
And he was kind of going through that at that time. But, yeah. Well, you want to talk about a guy who really turned things around, right?
It's unbelievable.
Isn't it nuts? I mean, like 20 years ago, you know, he was in prison and he was on drugs and...
He was like just a punchline for a lot of people.
Yeah.
They were just he was the cultural marker for, hey, look at this young star who just totally ruined his career. And now he's like
an icon. Man. Yeah, he's the man. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, 2008 was a good year for him, man. That's you know, I mean, he had Tropic Thunder and Iron Man both came out that year. He got an Oscar nomination for Tropic Thunder. So that was it. But I personally, we talked about this before, I personally think the first step in that comeback was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. He's so good. That movie is great. That is, I mean, that's, you know, he and Val Kilmer are unbelievable in that movie. I love that movie.
More people got to see it. I feel like I caught wind of it despite being pretty young at the time.
Yeah.
People were like, oh, yeah, you got to see Kiss Kiss Bang.
Oh, it's great. I think it's a great movie. Oh,
spectacular.
Yeah. So we're talking about weird food here from different states. And we were talking about, you know, like for some reason in the 60s, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, every old school recipe had some sort of gelatin. Here's a 408 area code, send us in a text. If you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. There was a recipe I used to make as a teenager. Yellow cake, poke holes in it, then pour Jell-O with half of the amount of water. Pour it over the top and then frosting. Oh, my God. It says, OMG, my teeth hurt just thinking about it. So yellow cake, poke holes in it, pour Jell-O with half the amount of water. Pour that over the top, and then more frosting. Good Lord.
I'm looking at some photos right now of some stuff from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And this is criminal.
What?
I don't know what people thought they were doing.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the things that you're seeing here?
So we've got, let's see, frosted ribbon loaf.
that was my radio name in college. Yeah, man, frosted ribbon loaf.
Oh, my God. Jellied tomato refresher, which appears to be a cocktail made of, or something, of jellied tomatoes.
Oh.
Cup steak puddings.
What? Cup steak puddings?
I don't know. They look like prehistoric creatures, man. Lime cheese salad. That's with Jell-O. That's some lime there, Jell-O right there.
Of course it is, yeah.
With what appears to be oh, my God. Like, seafood salad in the center.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a thing, man.
Oh, maybe you like... Do you like liver?
I do.
Maybe you would like some... a liver sausage pineapple?
Well, I don't know what pineapple has to... I like liver sausage. I like liverwurst. Yeah. Liverwurst slash well, liver sausage. I love that stuff.
And it's not. It has. It's no pineapple flavoring. It's just fashioned to look like a pineapple. It is a mix of liverwurst, mayonnaise, and Worcester sauce, or however you say it.
Wow,
Worcester sauce.
That sounds weird.
Oh,
but it's just for some reason it's shaped like a pineapple.
Yeah, it is. It is designed to look like a pineapple.
Why?
You know, maybe it was for like a tropical themed thing going on. People were really into Hawaiian sort of stuff back in the day.
Sure.
So.
How about out of Colorado, they say shredded wheat. That comes from Colorado? Shredded wheat? Colorado gave us the dulcet tones of John Denver and a lifetime's worth of weed jokes. But it also gave us shredded wheat. That crispy, then mushy fiber bomb that's nobody's favorite cereal. It's a precursor to all those drab, gross, active lifestyle foods that Coloradans swear by. And by active lifestyle, we mean actively pooping in a nursing home. Hold on a minute. I don't hate shredded wheat.
Well, isn't frosted mini wheats? That's shredded wheat.
It is. Well,
I mean, they got shredded, frosting on.
Yeah, well, shredded wheat is pretty much, there's no frosting, or it's just... It's just
shredded wheat.
You just get a, you know, you get like a big, like a biscuit of shredded wheat, and you smash it up, and you pour milk in it, and then as much sugar as you can possibly, handle. But I didn't. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't hate shredded wheat. I know a lot of people did. I didn't. Not very. It's not the most tasty thing in the world, but it's
keeps you regular.
It certainly does.
To a fault.
Yeah. All right, Connecticut, New Haven clam pie. All right, we'll figure out what that is after we break. New Haven clam pie. That sounds delightful. All right, let's take a quick break here. We got the news coming up after this, and then we'll tell you all about the New Haven clam pie. And if you have any weird foods that you had when you were growing up, what was the worst and weirdest thing that you ever ate when you were growing up? 312-981-7200. We're going state by state with the grossest food, the grossest foods. And Tom, you continue to look weird stuff up online here.
I might have to clear the history after this. This is just upsetting.
It is. Seems like it. All right. The news is coming up right after this.
Well, I went down to the Grundy County Auction, where I saw something I just had to have. My mind told me I should proceed with caution, but my heart said, go ahead and make a bid on that. And I said, hey, pretty lady, won't you give me a sign? I'd give anything to make you mine.
All right, Two for Tuesday continues. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. Who's that? Who requested that?
That was, hold on one moment, please. That was our good pal Squat. Wanted to hear a little John Michael Montgomery.
John Michael Montgomery.
Yeah, that song is called Sold, the Grundy County Auction Incident.
See, I know that song word by word.
What?
my musical knowledge is extremely limited to 90s country, and I believe that was probably in the 80s or 90s.
Thank God.
That's, you know, in,
hey, that's a good song. I don't care.
By the way, for those of you who are just tuning in, Vic is educating himself music-wise. And we're going to check in with Vic every Friday morning. Vic, we'll get more of what you've been listening to. And you're right now, though, as I understand, Vic, you are enjoying some Simon and Garfunkel.
So, I like your emphasis on the latter syllable. Yes, and it's great.
Yeah.
I love the album, The Bridge Over Troubled Water. I just now learned to drop the S. I've been saying Troubled Waters all day, and somebody finally told me it's not waters, it's water.
It's just water. Yeah. Paul Simon, one of the best songwriters that has ever lived. And he's written so many great songs. And Simon and Garfunkel, that's good stuff you're listening to. That's good stuff. So let's see. We got more weird food to talk about here. Mike in L.A. says, Nick, my grandmother used to make head cheese. It was this clear gelatinous thing with God knows what leftovers or what was in it. It makes me makes me sick just thinking about that back in the 60s. Yeah, head cheese is you can get that at the Jewels.
What is it?
Head cheese? Yeah. It's like a gelatin. It's filled with all kinds of different kind of weird meats, like slices of meat. If you just go, do a Google image search, just head cheese. People eat it. Vic, you ever have head cheese?
No, I can't say I have.
Yeah. It does not look delightful.
Great name, though.
Yeah. That was my radio name. Yeah, man, head cheese. Thank you. 815 area code says the cake with Jell-O is called pokey cake. And it had Cool Whip on top. Now I won't eat Cool Whip. Currently, pokey cake can be made with pudding. I don't understand any of those words.
I think it might just be poke cake.
Poke?
Yeah, because you got to poke the holes in it. Just poke cake.
Poke cake. I don't understand any. I don't understand what's happening. People still eat Cool Whip? Is that a thing?
I put a little Cool Whip. Like if I'm having some frozen strawberries or something, I put a little Cool Whip.
All right. Now, but what about New Haven clam pie? That sounds fantastic. This is from Connecticut. There are people who think pizza should always be minimalist. Then there are those people who throw any and all types of crap on it, no matter how weird it is, like pineapples. But both constituents can agree that Connecticut's weird obsession with loading clams atop white-sauced pies seems a little suspect. Clams are good. Pizza obviously is good. Clam pizza, when introducing clams naked, slippery, and slug-like to almost any food, you'll end up with a white-hot mess. Even the grace of pizza can't ease their alien appearance. Now, this is where it gets complicated. If you get over the damn unpretty appearance and actually try one of these salty, savory, deeply flavorful pies, your taste buds will cover for your eyeballs. This beautiful nightmare is probably the second best thing to ever come out of Connecticut. So there you go.
Huh.
Clam, New Haven clam pie. All right, how about this? This is out of Delaware. Slippery dumplings. When you add the word slippery in front of any food, it instantly becomes unappetizing. Slippery pancakes, slippery salads, slippery beef Wellington. Such is the tragedy of the vastly underappreciated slippery dumplings. It doesn't help that the dish looks like the inside of a chicken pot pie that a golden retriever ate and then promptly puked back up. Slippery dumplings are a crock-pot miracle of savory chicken and thick noodles and a rich, gravy-like chicken broth. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So, yeah, so is taste. But that's what the dish lacks, and it looks what it lacks in looks, it brings in home-style comfort. These things are like that really ugly kid from high school who turned out to be a demon in the sack, except that they won't tell your friends the next day. Despite the name, you can trust these slippery dumplings. How about Florida? Gator tail. Florida men are known for anything. It's not, if Florida men are known for anything, it's not following the rules. Everyone from Florida is just a little bit crazy tucked in behind their flowing and opulent red tails. But seriously, while the Sunshine State abounds with hot food destinations, comes up with gator tails. They stick it in stews, they mash them into burgers, they eat them along with gator ribs. But while eating a literal cold-blooded killing machine might make some Northerners queasy, the people of Florida dig right in. So it is a rubbery, succulent chicken-type taste. The reptiles are great. All right. How about a Georgia ham hocks? They sound like a crude, yet it sounds like a crude male porn star name, ham hocks, and they smell like a boiling plate of concentrated Slim Jim grease. If you're thinking Slim Jim grease. If you're thinking that this disconcerting mound of meat looks like a dismembered swine knuckle, you are oddly accurate. They are indeed pig knuckles. And even the long, rich southern tradition of sticking them in a stew or serving them up solo alongside collard greens can't erase images like that. Ham hocks are what you would certainly call an acquired taste. Sadly, if you didn't start munching on these paws very early in life, you'll probably never get into them. Yeah. Ham hocks. Who likes ham hocks? Fred Sanford enjoys ham hocks.
Likes a good ham hock.
He loves the ham hocks. How about Hawaii? Spam musubi. I love spam. Love it. When you go to Hawaii, a few things are certain. You'll relax on a beautiful beach. You'll probably get sick of hearing ukuleles, and at some point you'll be confronted with spam musubi, which is like a nice, the highly processed Minnesota canned meat product with sashimi grade tuna instead. Spam has been a favorite in Hawaii ever since it became sought after export from the mainland in the early days of the statehood, largely because it lasts forever. For mainlanders, it has baggage as a mystery meat. In Hawaii, it has the clout of, well, a mystery meat. But hey, you're in Hawaii, the worst things that can happen is that you'll discover you don't like spam, but you'll be still in good shape. Yeah, they have spam everywhere in Hawaii.
That's just a state delicacy, and I don't know how that happened. Was that just because it was easy to ship?
It kept well, and I'm not really sure. I'm not sure the origin why it is so specifically, you know, spam is so specifically Hawaii based, but they love it in Hawaii. You can get it. You can get spam at McDonald's in Hawaii.
Nice spam mac.
Yeah, you can get spam everywhere. They just have spam. Spam is everywhere. So, here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Nick.
Hi.
My mom made a version of that poke cake or whatever you call it.
Uh-huh.
And she'd put the holes to where each piece of cake you cut it got some pudding in it. And it's basically like a Hostess cream-filled cupcake.
Oh, okay.
You know, so that wasn't bad. And, yeah, I'm one of those weird guys that does enjoy pineapple on a pepperoni pizza once in a while.
Oh, boy.
I learned that taste when I was in the down in Central America when I was in the Army. That was a local favorite down there. And so when the locals invited you to have a piece of pizza, that's what you got. So it's actually not bad because it's the sweet and salty.
Yeah, I don't know if I can go. I don't know if I can do that, Rich.
It's not a whole lot of it's not a whole lot of pineapple. You know, it's mostly a pepperoni pizza with, you know, pineapple scattered about it, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really not bad. And your deal about spam became popular in Hawaii during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the main, quote, meat the government sent the troops. And,
yeah.
Of course, the troops from mainland didn't eat it, so they gave it away to the civilians.
Yeah. And then it is like the state meat.
Yeah.
It really is.
And like you said, it's, you know, it's a whole lot easier to ship spam than it is to get fresh. I know they've got fresh meat and,
yeah,
you know, cattle herds over there, but it's more, you know, it's a lot easier, you know.
Yeah.
And affordable, you know, because I'm sure I have not ever been to Hawaii, but I'm sure the cost of living over there is pretty high.
It is pretty high. Yeah, it is.
You know, so yeah, you know, you'd learn to eat cheap.
Yeah, it's true. All right, so, Rich. Thanks, man.
All right.
Take care.
Yep, have a good evening.
You too.
Yep, bye.
All right. Here's Beth on WGN. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
Hi.
I was going to tell you how to make spam musubi. I made it one time. I have a sister who's been in Hawaii for over 50 years. Anyway, what you do is you cook rice and you make it thick and chewy, and you cut it into pieces probably about an inch tall by 2 by 4, and then you put the spam on top of the rice, and then you wrap the whole thing with a seaweed.
Okay.
That's the part that's not that good.
Right.
But I made it one time, and I'm in Racine, and I went to a special shop that specializes in foreign foods and things that aren't in the regular grocery store. But, yeah, I would eat the spam and the rice, but leave off the seaweed.
Got it. All right. Yeah. All right.
Alrighty.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
312-981-7200. We got some texts coming in. 815 area code says Malort liquor. When I was a drinking man, I drank Malort a lot. I like Malort. I mean, I haven't had it in years, but I like it. I'm pretty sure it's flat cola distilled with cigarette butts. It's like what Rumpelstiltskin would taste like. you ever witness someone having their first shot of Malort?
I decided to be a Malort ambassador early last year, and I brought a bottle of Malort to Scotland. And, you know, they're big drinkers. I thought they could probably handle it. I thought I was going to get kicked out by my own family. They were like, this is horrible. Why would you bring this here?
Yeah. No, it's something. I mean, it's something.
It's booze.
It's, yeah. But you know what's it, you know, there's really not. I mean, you know, there's not. There's what is it like 70 proof?
Yeah, it's 35% alcohol.
Yeah,
so it's really not that heavy.
No, it's not.
It's just
but
the
it tastes like you know. But you get used to it though. I started the first time I had Malort. This was way before it became hip, because now it's Malort is hip, and this was like back in the early 90s. And one of the only places where you could get it was at Simon's in Andersonville. And for a long time, Simon's was the biggest seller of Malort in the city. And so that was like the shot that you did at Simon's. And I remember the first time I tasted it, I was like, what the hell is this? But it says that, you know, that there's a, you know, the little literature that comes with the bottle says that the first two times you taste it, you won't like it. But the third time we get you. And that's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. The first time I tried it, I was like, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever tasted in my life. Second time, I was like, ugh. But then by the third time, I'm like, oh, this is not bad.
Well, at least the rise in popularity of Malort has brought it back home in terms of production.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a Chicago thing, man.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. All right, we got a break here. Malort.
The greatest delicacy of them all.
I can't tell you how much I don't miss that. So we're going to break here. And you want to talk about weird foods and stuff like that, 312-981-7200. And we'll jump back into it right after this. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Get your request in now, 312-981-7200. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. Yeah, we're talking weird food. State by state, the weirdest food in each state. And we'll get to Illinois in just a couple of minutes here to find out what the weird food is from Illinois. But let's see. Here's Patrick on WGN. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, Nick. How you doing this morning?
All right.
Brother?
All right.
My 89-year-old uncle swears by head cheese, or swore by it. I don't think he can have it anymore. But you were not allowed into his house until you tried it. And all I can say is, he remains in his own lonely little clique and club with that one.
Yeah,
he's the only one that's a member of that club.
Yeah, I can't wrap my mind around head cheese. I can't do it.
No, they all come from like the deep south. My family has roots in the deep south, and my
sure.
father rooted they were, with the pig. They were rooted to the Tudor people. So
yeah,
you know, my old man. Pig's feet all around the house, stinking up the
sure.
house. Pig's feet, and my mother is from Louisiana, so New Year's, she would make a big pot of gumbo. Which, okay, yeah, gumbo's awesome.
Yeah,
but she'd also make chitlins. Now,
yeah, I've had chitlins.
Yeah, well, I will not touch them ever again. I used to love them as a kid. Yeah,
yeah.
As a kid. They're awesome, you know, awesome soul food, and when they're done right.
Yeah.
That's all I would just leave it at that. You go to somebody's house that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they try to feed your plate, you're done. You're done.
Yeah.
Period. But that's my weird food, and even though it's not from Illinois, you know, I think people still kind of do eat chitlins. I'm not sure. I see them in the grocery store, so.
Yeah, no, I think people still eat them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Doesn't have them.
Yeah, I agree.
And I will do my best to tune in tomorrow. And Tom told me, yes, Friday is the day.
Friday's the big day, man.
Friday's the big day. I plan to go Sunday. So
I'm going Saturday. I already got my tickets. I'm seeing it in the IMAX. I'm seeing it in the crazy IMAX.
So. Oh, there is no way I'm not seeing that in IMAX. It is an IMAX. It is definitely IMAX.
So, yeah. We're talking, for those people who don't know, we're talking about Godzilla because it's, you know, it's going to be the greatest movie ever made. So.
I will say I saw one bad review, and you want to know why it was a bad review?
Mm. Why?
Because there's too much monster fighting.
Oh, they said there's too much monster fighting?
There's too much monster fighting.
There can never be. There can never be too much monster fighting.
Okay, so in 2014 there wasn't enough.
Yeah,
and now there's too much.
And now there's too
much. So it just reminds me of that Batman meme. You ever see the Batman meme where he's slapping Robin?
Oh yeah.
So it's like Robin's like, oh, there's too much, and Batman's like, shut up and let your mouth in the first.
Exactly.
That's exactly what you want to do.
All right, Patrick, have a good one, man.
You do the same, brother.
Take care, buddy. Yeah.
I love that guy.
Yeah. 708 area code says, how about cinnamon sugar graham crackers with chocolate pudding between and frosted with Cool Whip? It's a miracle that we survived the 70s. So many weird foods. Hey, Nick, how about ambrosia salad? About ambrosia salad, each southern state must have their own version. I've had it with only sweet tangerines or oranges and coconut only. Chilled, and it's quite refreshing. I also had it with pineapple added. Prefer only one fruit. I am a Chicago native, so and thought it was very different to give this a try. Over-the-top sweet salad. Try this. One can of fruit, cocktail drained. Half pint of blueberries washed, one medium container of Cool Whip. Yikes. Not only is it purple from the berries, just doesn't look like appetizing at all. That's from a Chicago housewife, not me. Her intentions were good. She took most of it home. Canadian Bill says, my mom used to make cow tongue sandwiches, but I refused to eat them. Nothing coming from a cow's mouth. I've had tongue.
Mm.
I like it. I do.
I've had tripe. Tripe is quite good.
Yeah. I guess so.
A little chewy.
Yeah. How about this? An out of Idaho, sturgeon eggs. What would you think of that out of an Idaho?
Is there water in
Idaho? Most Idahoans subsist on a steady diet of steak, fried chicken, tots, and tall boys. But the state is also a prime producer of American beluga, which is a fancy way of saying American caviar, which is a nice way of saving big-ass sturgeon eggs from the Idaho's rivers. Tastes like popping a salty miniature balloon full of fish goop and butter in your mouth. Well, that sounds fantastic. Also, it sells for more than $100 an ounce. So if you see it on a menu in Idaho, get the steak, fried chicken, or the tots. Illinois, are we ready?
Here we are.
Gravy bread. If you're at all familiar with the Chicagoland delicacy, it's the Italian beef. You know some indulgent-minded locals, many of them, like to order the sandwich dipped in the warm vat of beef juice for extra flavor and sloppiness. Well, gravy bread is kind of like that, except there's no sandwich. It's just wet, soggy roll. It's just a wet, soggy roll saturated with spiced beef juice. And no joke, some people even order this for delivery, meaning you get a cold, slightly cold, wet, soggy roll saturated in beef juice. It doesn't taste too terrible. Everyone loves dunking it into soup.
That sounds delicious.
It is delicious.
It is. It's great.
Gravy bread is great.
I'm starving now.
So, all right, we got more weird food we're going to talk about after the news, which is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. Who's what is that? Who requested that?
So Paul wanted to hear a little Alan Parsons project.
Oh my God, that was Alan Parsons.
Yeah,
Alan Parsons.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there it is. Two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're talking about weird food and what are some of the weird recipes that you had when you were growing up, or and then we're going state by state with the strangest food or the grossest food. How about this? Indiana. The brain sandwich. While hardly ubiquitous in the Hoosier state, brain sandwiches still have their strongholds, particularly down around the southern tip in and around Evansville, with the Hilltop Inn being the most celebrated purveyor of the delicacy. They had to switch it up from cow brains to pig brains because of Mad Cow, but the brain train is still chugging along. Mercifully, the brains are breaded and fried, which, along with a hit of mustard, can make just about anything at least palatable. But there's an unmistakable mushiness that makes it hard to escape the reality that you've gone full zombie. I've never had a brain sandwich. Iowa loose meat. That's Made Right is the chain
that makes loose meat.
It's loose. It's a loose meat sandwich.
Okay. It sounds like you've had it.
I have. And it's really
pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right. All right.
You know that Roseanne Barr, and when she was with the Tom, what the hell is his name that she was married to? Tom Arnold. They had a loose meat they had a loose meat restaurant, loose meat sandwich restaurant.
Roseanne's Loose Meat.
Yeah. Yeah, so they it's actually really. I mean, that's without question. If you were asking anybody from Iowa what the signature dish is out of Iowa,
it's a loose meat sandwich.
Loose meat sandwich, no question about it. On a fundamental level, what is essentially a combination of ground beef and carbs can only achieve so much grossness. That said, Iowa's famed loose meat sandwich, mostly associated with the Made Right chain, are doing themselves a few aesthetic favors. As possible with an allegedly solid foundation. It looks like a sloppy Joe that forgot to get dressed, or a burger that gave up on life. The taste ain't going to hurt you. Again, it's bread and meat, but it's likely not to win any beauty contests either. So loose meat just isn't the most appealing phrase either. Maybe a makeover is in order. Yeah, I've had them. They're good. Let's see. Here's Big Ed on WGN. Hi, Ed.
Howdy, Nick.
Hi.
That Roseanne, they should have called that loose lip sandwich instead of loose meat.
Yeah.
Hey, before I get to my food concoction here, just wanted to run this by you. That, you know, on Fridays when you do the Spies thing, you play that little intro song?
Yeah.
Every time I hear Larry from Aurora,
yeah.
I smile.
Yeah.
It puts a smile on my face every single time.
Yeah, he was something. Larry was something, man. Tom, you never had the pleasure of encountering the late great Larry from Aurora. He passed away. He's got to be 10 years now. Or maybe a little bit less.
Something
like that. He was just a character and a half, man.
Yeah.
Maybe sometime you could tell your audience a story or two about him, because he was something special.
He was amazing. He was absolutely amazing. One of my favorite listeners of all time. And, yeah, so.
All right, my food concoction. Since you drink a lot of milk, I assume that you enjoy the cottage cheese.
I love cottage cheese.
Did you ever try it with jelly?
No.
I'm telling you, Nick, cottage cheese with Smucker's strawberry jelly is delicious.
Well, you know, both of those things I enjoy separately, so maybe they would be tasty together.
Give it a try, buddy. You'll like it.
All right, Ed. Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Love cottage cheese.
Took me a while to get into cottage cheese.
Oh, man. Love it. Kansas. Byrocks. It's pronounced B-Rock, but best set in the style of an old German man attempting to clear his throat. B-rocks are also sometimes called cabbage rolls, because back in the day, Germans would find a way to stuff cabbage into anything. These days, they'll frequently find them in small Kansas towns, heavy on the German ancestry. So it's essentially, it's just a cabbage roll.
Hmm.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
Sounds pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mind a little cabbage.
Yeah. Here's Dave on WGN. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Nick, I just had a quick story about head cheese.
That's not a sentence you hear very often. I had a quick story about head cheese.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my family's from the South, too, and they used to eat it. And, of course, me and my brothers hated it. But my brother came home a little late one night, if you know what I mean, and tried to fry head cheese and make a sandwich.
Oh, God.
And, of course, yeah, because it's held together by gelatin, it just melted. And I think head cheese is a holdover from the days, you know, I'm sure you know, too, of no refrigeration and
yeah.
not wasting anything.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually German, because my family called it Saus. And it was, I've seen it, you know, in like old Buteras and stuff. It's spelled S-O-U-Z-E or something like that.
Okay.
And it's like the nastiest stuff in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, you certainly have to have a taste for it, Dave. There's no question about it.
No. You should have seen my brother's face when his meat melted.
Yeah. That sounds disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dave, thanks.
Sure.
A story about head cheese.
I can't believe the conversation that started. There's a lot of people out there that seem to know quite a bit about head cheese.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Kentucky lamb fries. Well, we know what those are, right? You know what lamb fries are?
No. It sounds like... Well,
they're testicles.
Okay.
If you're going to chomp on some deep-fried testicles, yep, fries are a euphemism for gonads, you might as well go with lamb rather than the sheep. You might not want to think about how they are made. They're parboiled, sliced in half, and then immersed in boiling hot oil. So, yeah, lamb fries.
I've had turkey fries.
I've had lamb and turkey.
Preference?
Well, they both kind of taste like liver, you know, which I don't mind because I enjoy liver. But they do. They taste like liver. I mean, you've had the turkey.
Yeah,
testicles.
I agree. They do have that livery taste.
Exactly. In Louisiana, there is Nutria. You think frog legs are questionable? Try eating what's best described as large semi-aquatic river rat, boiled in a crock pot for 4 hours. Don't worry, it has a demi-glace. Now, Nutria is a bayou classic, despite the off-putting nature of eating what is most definitely a giant rodent. If you've had rabbit, which is even too much for some people, you might draw parallels. It's similarly rough, tough, and chickeny. For the longest time, people down there simply used what they had around, and that they had these hordes of enormous, terrifying, yellow-toothed water rodents. Unfortunately, no amount of Cajun spices could erase the nightmare-fueling teeth from our brains. Okay. In Maine, it's tamale, and that's not like the tamale. It's spelled T-O-M-A-L-L-E-Y. If you think Maine, you think lobster. Strip out their cultural acceptance, and there is a certain inherent grossness in the lobster, what with its resemblance to a big old bug, but we're not going to march in here and straight up claim that the lobster is gross when lobster rolls exist, but it is a certain byproduct of cooking lobster that most assuredly qualifies, and it's called tamale, which you probably simply know as that gross, mushy green stuff. Biologically speaking, it's the lobster's liver and pancreas. And while it's deep with flavor, you've likely unknowingly encountered it in soups and sauces, but Maynard swear by eating the stuff straight up. Let's just say there's a reason it hasn't caught on as popular as the lobster roll topping. How about Maryland stuffed ham? Stuffed ham? Americans have a proud tradition of stuffing foods and other foods. Look no further than your Thanksgiving turkey for evidence. But something about this particular incarnation, which looks a whole lot weirder than it sounds, just doesn't sit right. Particularly popular in southern Maryland, the stuffed ham consists of a corned ham, brined, not smoked, that's deboned, hacked at it a bit, and opened up stuffing sauce, filled with greens. Kale and cabbage are the most common choices, wrapped in cheesecloth, then boiled.
It's so cooked.
The result, a boiled ham that looks like it's erupted in cracks with some green phlegm disorder. Once sliced up, it's on a plate with ham and greens, but surely they are tastier, less frightening ways to achieve this flavor combo. That sounds not good. Stuffed ham.
This was enough to make me avoid, what was it, Southern Maryland?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. All right. 312-981-7200 if you've got some weird food or weird recipes from the past. Massachusetts, we got marshmallow fluff. That's out of Massachusetts? I didn't know that. We'll get that in a second. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. See the world. Is that Alan Parsons?
Yep.
Wow.
It's called Limelight.
Okay. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning, 1 to 5. And we're talking about each state has some sort of weird food. Like Massachusetts marshmallow fluff. And I didn't know that was a... That was a Massachusetts thing.
You can just get that in the store.
In ye olde New England, classics are typically gut-sticking dishes with hard scrabble roots like Boston baked beans, creamy clam chowder, hell, even scrod, which sounds like it's tender young fish. But in marshmallow fluff, a creepy white substance with connections to neither land nor sea, Massachusetts salutes its all-processed American destiny. Literal tubs of the stuff, blindingly white and strangely shiny, are the apex of lab food. Fittingly, the sandwich named for its sticky white stuff, the Fluffernutter, could be confused with insider speak. Spacklet on white bread with peanut butter, two other processed food stuffs with either enough sugar to kill a small deer, and you've got yourself a straight sweet shot of diabetes. All right, let's see. Here's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Yeah, I want to tell you about South Tennessee. We have what we call liver and lights. We kill hogs in October, and you take the liver and the lungs. You take the lungs, cut them all up, add heart and everything else to it, and you boil it, season it real good. That's liver and lights. Now, I don't think they have hog lungs in the stores anywhere because it's not legal.
Right.
But since we kill them there on the farm, we can take care of it ourselves.
Wow. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. And we make head cheese, and it's just what it is. You take the hog's head and you boil it, and when it boils down, you take all the meat and the fat and the gelatin and put it in the mold and put it in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
So
there it is, right there. All right, Jim, thanks.
All right, you're welcome.
Take care. I wonder how many people are hungry right now. In Michigan, Some crap your neighbor killed is what it says here. You can get a Coney on every corner of Detroit and Flint. And a pasty on the mile marker in the Upper Peninsula. And everywhere in between, you'll probably run across some dude in a camo hat selling venison chili, possum jerky, whitefish dip, or God knows what else. He killed with his 10-year-old son and gutted on the spot. Sometimes it's delicious. Sometimes you chip your teeth on buckshot. So basically, they're just saying that in Michigan, there's just things that everybody, they kill everything, and then they give it to you. Minnesota pickle dog. The state only gets approximately 3 weeks of decent weather after its hellish winter. So when the tundra thaws out, these people go nuts. And they do it better at the notorious state fair, which is aggressively disagreeable delicacy that is the pickle dog. This is not a hot dog with a pickle on it. This is a lone dill pickle covered in loose, messy sauerkraut drenched in Thousand Island dressing and wrapped in a thick-cut slice of roast beef. It's honestly like you lost a bet and you're eating a sandwich made out of the weirdest combo of your that your friend could find in the fridge. It's not pretty, but, hey, it's summertime in Minnesota. It doesn't last, and sometimes you need to grab life by the pickle. I would eat that.
I don't know. I feel like the sauerkraut's a little bit overkill.
I would totally eat that. Yeah.
Nothing says a hot summer's day like a pickle.
Yeah. Mississippi, they have the coolickle. K-O-O-L-I-C-K-L-E. Coolickle is not new. It's a pickle soaked in Kool-Aid. Oh, yeah. I've heard of this. It's a pickle soaked in Kool-Aid. Yes, you read that right. In Mississippi, they eat that willingly. And the result is uglier than the love child of the Kool-Aid man and the Vlasic stork. It looks like the centerpiece of a Stephen King novel. But if you give it a chance, it's not that bad. After all, it's beloved for a reason. The brine and sugar and artificial flavors blend together in every bite, deliver one of the most bizarre taste combos that you'll ever stumble across. Yeah, I've heard of that. Never tried it, though.
Do you ever wonder how people decided, you know what I'm going to do right now?
Yeah.
I'm going to take this here pickle.
You're going to try something. How about this? Missouri St. Louis-style pizza. Nobody outside of Missouri truly appreciates St. Louis's pizza, probably because they've never had Imo's Square Beyond Compare, a yeast-free, cracker-thin crust that's topped with aggressively sliced, slightly sweet tomato sauce and a St. Louis staple, the Provel cheese. The processed oddity comes in ropes reminiscent of Twizzler's Pull and Peel, and only available in the depths of Middle America. Because of its consistency, one bite of this crunchy, slimy square, yeah, it's cut into squares because how can you fold a cracker? It will burn the roof of your mouth and just sort of stay there. The burn lingers, which sucks because pizza is supposed to be your friend, but on the other hand, it's kind of brilliant because you don't have to spring for any extra cheese. There's still some left on the roof of your mouth. That sounds delightful. Rocky Mountain oysters in Montana. We all know what that is. Yes. Let's see. They have the annual testicle festival. You know, they had those, the turkey testicle festival, they always have the night before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
In a bunch of bars. And when I used to work on Thanksgiving, on holidays, now I actually get holidays off, but I used to work on Thanksgiving and always work the night before Thanksgiving. We used to always get people on the line who were at the bars eating the turkey testicles.
I mean, it's a big thing I know in the my neck of the woods out by Crystal Lake. I want to say it's, oh God, where they have it?
There is a bunch of bars. Oh, I mean, the night before Thanksgiving. That's the big time for it. So, all right, weird food. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. We still got a few more states to go through, and we want to hear from you. If you had some old weird recipes that were handed down from your family and you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And we'll get to that right after the news, which is up after this.
You can never know what it's like. Your blood like winter freezes just like ice. And there's a cold and lonely light that shines from you. You'll wind up like the wreck you hide behind that mask you use.
And you right. Welcome back, everybody. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Who requested the Elton John?
That was Margaret in Bridgeport.
Margaret in Bridgeport. All right. So we're talking about some weird foods or the gross foods from each state. Now, what about this? Nebraska. The hot beef sundae. The visual trickery of making sundaes out of savory foodstuffs has become a popular trope at state fairs all over the country, but Nebraska has a particular affinity for them, and was on the bandwagon early. You get the idea. The mashed potatoes are the ice cream. The roast beef is chocolate. Top it with some gravy and a cherry or tomato. And it's dessert looking food. It'll taste fine, but if you ever found yourself tearing into some roast beef and potatoes and not thought to yourself, I wish this looked more like ice cream. Yeah. Let's see. Here's John on WGN. Hey, John.
Yes. Another St. Louis oddity is something called, for some reason, the St. Paul sandwich, and you get them at Chinese takeouts. It's an egg foo young patty on white bread with mayonnaise and tomato.
Oh. Oh. That sounds brutal.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise and tomato with an egg foo young patty. Why is it called a St. Paul sandwich?
I have no idea.
That's very weird. That's just very weird. Wow. And that's a St. Louis thing.
They only sell them at takeout, delivery, Chinese places.
Yeah. Wow, that's just strange. That's just real. Everything about that is strange. All right, John, thanks for the call. Yeah. Saint? That just doesn't make any sense. The Saint Paul sandwich? Nevada. There's that plate of food that you made at a casino's all-you-can-eat buffet. So it's basically just an all-you-can-eat buffet. No one goes to Vegas to eat responsibly, and you will not find a grosser plate in the state when the ones tourists assemble while eating at the legendary all-you-can-eat buffets. Where else can you get a scoop of expensive caviar laying next to a soft taco partially covered in marinara sauce from the spaghetti next to it? You'd be rightfully ashamed if you ate that plate for dinner at your house or somehow convinced a chef to serve it to you in a restaurant. But if you're at a Vegas buffet, anything goes. You shovel those fish eggs into your mouth after housing a huge chocolate sundae. So that's what you do. Shovel the food. Let's see. Keveroo? Is that who this is? Yeah, go ahead.
That's me.
All right.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
How's your Tuesday so far?
It's good. What's up?
Well, here's a food for you. You haven't had it, probably. Oxtail soup.
I have had oxtail soup.
You have had oxtail soup?
Yes, sir.
Do you like it?
I do.
Oh. What do you like about it?
The taste?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have had oxtail soup. Had it at a restaurant, geez, I don't even know, like 10 years ago or something like that. Something along those lines. All right, Kevin Ruth, thanks. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Tony on WGN. Hey, Tony.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I went to Memphis a couple years ago, and as a side with a meal, you can get barbecued spaghetti.
Oh, yeah.
Which got a meat topping to it. It's really good, actually. I've made it at home a few times since traveling there, but just a little on the different side.
It's a little something to get used to, though, when you think, you know, like barbecue. Barbecue spaghetti just seems a little bit weird, but it's actually not bad.
Yeah, but two good things. Has anybody called the Springfield with their hot, or what do they call the? Oh, shoot, I just lost the name of it.
Yeah.
The haystacks.
Oh, okay.
Where you put the hamburger patty, the french fries, the gravy, the cheese.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The horseshoe.
Horseshoe, that's what it is. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The horseshoe. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
It was a haystack.
Yeah.
We called it the haystack. Yeah, that's a little different. So.
All right, Tony. Thanks, okay, boy. Thanks. Take care. Pennsylvania Scrapple, the ultimate breakfast meat. It's not just meat. There's something else going on in there, too.
Yeah, there's traditionally a mush of pork scraps and trimmings combined with cornmeal and wheat flour.
Right.
It's called Pan Rabbit. It's because the Dutch name is Pan Haas.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
I've had Scrapple.
Pretty good?
Yeah, I like it.
Looks like it could be good. It just seems like kind of just a loaf. It's just meatloaf.
Well, it's kind of like that, but you fry it up. New Hampshire says Grape Nuts Ice Cream. The Granite State may have taken its nickname a little too literally with this ice cream. Take one delicious, creamy, cold treat and then completely ruin it with Grandpa's favorite cereal. New Englanders may argue that this adds a crunchy counterpart to the lush dessert, but the texture and flavor of concrete pebbles and a chipped filling is something we need like a buckshot in the back of the head. We just expected more from those whose motto is live free or die. Grape nuts. Never been a fan of grape nuts.
No?
They're neither grape nor nuts.
It's irony in a box.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where they came up with the name. Grape nuts, but it's a little misleading. How about this out of New Jersey? The pork roll.
I've heard a lot about the pork roll.
It sounds like a raunchy teen comedy. In its unsliced form, it looks like a hot dog stuffed with helium. A Goodyear blimp of meat. Basically, it's a devastatingly salty processed pork product that's an unassuming but nuclear threat to the cholesterol of anyone who's ever lived in the Garden State. The first time you bite into the pork roll, egg and cheese, it seems like the boss himself struck a power chord on your freaking taste buds. You see, if it only looks like Chris Christie, it plays like Springsteen when placed between the two bagel halves and paired with cheese and a scrambled egg. It defies all logic. Wow. That sounds like something. Your head will thud with the question, why is this so good? All right. New Mexico, carne adobada. Pork, unquestionably delicious. Red chili, also tasty. And yet when you look at the plate of this, it resembles a plate of wet dog food and marinara sauce, which is crazy, because how delicious is it? The pork is tender, the red chili adds a hit of heat, and if you eat it at a place like Mary and Tito's in Albuquerque, it gets paired with a perfectly cooked sunny-side egg and hash browns. All of that sounds good.
Big into it.
New York. Garbage plate. Contrary to popular belief, New York doesn't begin in Coney Island and end somewhere around 125th Street. And you'll be happy to know that there is, in fact, some weird stuff up there. The adorably named garbage plate is proof enough. Remember when you were five and you took everything in your parents' fridge, put it in a bowl, and microwaved it? Well, they're selling a grown-up facsimile to this. in Rochester, Buffalo, Saratoga, and all of the upstate New York areas, even before the Bills were around to start losing football games. Legend has it that a college student showed up at Nick Tao's Hots, asked for a plate with all the garbage on it. He got the entire kitchen, hamburgers, cheeseburgers, grilled cheese, eggs, home fries, baked beans, haddock, macaroni and salad, Italian sausage, chicken tenders, and so that's basically all it is. It's just the garbage plate.
Huh.
North Carolina liver mush. It never had a chance. It's called liver mush. Could anything called liver mush ever be appetizing? Both liver and mush are so gross on their own, not even a space wants to get stuck between them. And shockingly, liver mush is not grosser than the sum of its parts. Pig liver, head parts, and cornmeal make up the little bars that look like burnt Pop-Tarts. It might be a southern staple, but from the outside looking in, it's the world's most nauseating doorstop. It looks like a cinder block. How are you going to adore a food that could double as the foundation of the YMCA? There you go. All right. Let's take a break here for some weather, everybody. And then we'll get back to the food conversation.
Captain Fantastic, raised and regimented, hardly a hero. Just someone whose mother might know. Very clearly a case for...
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Two for Tuesday continues.
Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday.
That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And also coming up, The Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on a Tuesday morning. And we're talking about state by state with some weird and gross foods and some old-fashioned recipes that are all that involve, you know, gelatin. It seems like there's gelatin involved in every old recipe. So let's see. Here's Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Morning. How about tripe or cow brains scrambled with eggs, which they don't advise anymore because of Jakob Kreutzoff's disease.
Right.
Yeah, but we used to have that very often because it was a cheap meal.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff that we're talking about came about because it was affordable.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And being a child of the Depression, I know all about that.
Yeah. Okay, Elizabeth, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Take care. Let's see. North Dakota lutefisk. This gelatinous end product of whitefish, it's dried, soaked in lye for days, and then boiled. Came to the Midwest courtesy of the same immigrant population that ensured the state's dependence on high SPF sunscreen. It is gross, they say. Ohio, Cincinnati, chili, five-way. There's no question, there's nothing inherently gross about Cincinnati chili per se, if applied right. But here's a real question. Would you put spaghetti sauce on a hot dog? Probably not. So why would you put chili on spaghetti and then cover it with cheese, beans, and onions? Yeah. Oklahoma fried rattlesnake. While you can technically experience this treat anywhere rattlers are found, killed, sliced up, and fried, not everywhere has entire festivals dedicated to these noisy, toothy creatures. While some have shockingly likened the taste to chicken, the New York Times likened it to a sinewy, half-starved tilapia. Oh, God. Paper of record indeed. If you find yourself hungry in Oklahoma, we recommend an onion burger instead. In Oregon, crimes against ice cream. Oregon's ground zero for the ultra-fancy, ultra-weird ice cream craze, as evidenced by the constant lines for boutique parlors like the delicious Salt and Straw. Sometimes these flavors are weirdly great. Big ups to the blue cheese and fig. Other times, well, blood pudding ice cream is a thing. Ugh. No, no, no. I like blood pudding, but not. I don't want blood pudding ice cream. Especially when smaller, less capable confectioners start to mimicking the pros. Which is to say, if you've ever been to a small town of less than 300 people and somebody offers you corn ice cream and a Parmesan cone, you might want to get mint chip.
Pudding ice cream, jeez.
That's not good. Pennsylvania, Scrapple. We were just talking about Scrapple. Have you ever baked a funfetti cake and then left it out in the sun for 16 years? You'd probably end up with something that looks like Scrapple. Yes, people actually put this in their mouths, like North Carolina's liver mush. It's meat cake, meat log, meat brick, something like that, made with parts of animals that normally get sold to the glue or dog food factories. Pennsylvania Dutch delicacy mush. It's pork scraps and trimmings mixed with buckwheat flour, cornmeal, and spices. You chop it straight from the loaf, or you can eat it solo or fry up a slice and stick it in between Wonder Bread. Rhode Island chop suey sandwich. Chop suey, an American Chinese dish that consists of meat, eggs, vegetables, and often noodles cooked in a starch-thickening sauce, isn't exactly the most attractive of dishes. Slapping it between two hamburger buns doesn't make it any prettier. But while the chop suey sandwich is uglier than a Subway rat in a Christmas sweater, it's insanely delicious. It packs all the umami and salty flavor of your favorite Chinese takeout dish and places it conveniently between two pieces of bread. The good news is that you don't have to use chopsticks. Sure, it's messy, but hey, that's what napkins were invented for. South Carolina chitlins.
I can't believe that people are still eating that.
Mm. You get intestines, you get to eat hot dogs. You eat intestines when you eat hot dogs, so why do outsiders wince when they serve up alongside this delicious low country fare? Because it's straight up intestines, fried or boiled. Get them fried. If you're going to opt for it. All right, how about South Dakota? Chislic. It may sound like an off-brand chiclet or some sort of prairie disease, but chislic is, in fact, dice-sized meat cubes, lamb, beef, or wild game, seasoned and thrown into a deep fryer and then served and eaten with toothpicks. It's actually delicious, though the sight of the shriveled up cubed meat in a basket might make you want to feel a strong case against chislics. That sounds good to me. Tennessee, the fat Elvis. When we think of the king, we prefer to think of him jump-starting adolescence in the country by gyrating his jailhouse rock garb, not bursting out of his jumpsuit in a steady diet of peanut butter, banana, bacon sandwiches. That's not an inherently gross combo, mind you, but in a state known for great barbecue and hot chicken, food that will make you think of or resemble Elvis in his last days in and of itself is something of an abomination, especially when you eat one at a cafe near Graceland. You ever been to Graceland? Tom?
Say again?
Have you ever been to Graceland?
Graceland? No, I've always wanted to go.
You got to go.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have to go.
It's because I was in Nashville not that long ago, and I thought about trying to find the time to.
It is
a little far away.
It's to me, it's you have to go at least once. You have to. Mm-hmm. It's to me, it represents everything that this country is about.
Really,
everything.
So is it just his? Is it like just his house or
it's his house? The grave site at the end of the tour. Then you've got. the museums that are there. You can take the full tour, go on the, you can check out his cars, you can go on a plane. But to me, it represents everything about this country.
Hmm.
All its flaws, everything that's great about it, everything that's not great about it.
It's all in Graceland.
It's all in Graceland. It is truly America. I mean, in every sense of the word. I've been there twice. And
is it Memphis?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's my next trip down to Tennessee.
You got to go to Graceland. You got to. We stayed. I went there. I've been there twice, but once was on my first honeymoon with my first wife, and we stayed at the hotel with the guitar shaped pool that had 24-hour Elvis movies on the channel.
Nice.
It was a VCR that would stick in videotapes of Elvis movies. And at one point, I guess the guy, you know, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning and I wanted to watch more Elvis movies, but there was nothing on the screen. And so I went down to the desk and the guy fell asleep and I was like, "Hey, put an Elvis movie on, man. What's the matter with you?" And he's like, Oh yeah. So you put an Elvis movie.
Oh God. Imagine that being your job.
That's your job. Stay up all night. And put videotapes in of Elvis.
Do you think you're the first person to go down at 3 o'clock in the morning and keep him honest?
I'm pretty sure I was. Yeah. I mean, I wanted my 24-hour Elvis movies, man.
I mean, Jailhouse Rock, man. I mean,
come on. But it's really something. It really is something. And I did have the. Bacon and you know, the banana peanut butter banana sandwiches.
Beautiful.
So, yeah. So I don't know. I just think it's a great place. I love it. So I would highly recommend checking it out. So, all right, we're going to break here because the news is coming up here, and then we'll come back and wrap up the conversation with weird food. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. I also have this story about real mascots that people inexplicably thought were a good idea. And, Tom, you know how I feel about mascots, right?
Big fan.
Yeah, I love them. They just make me laugh. Mascots just crack me up. So, all right, news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's 2 for Tuesday.
Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. What do we got there?
A little Deep Purple requested by Pete.
All right. Pete, a little Deep Purple right there for you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we are talking about weird foods from each state. And some old weird recipes and stuff like that. Jeff in Hammond sends a text. And if you want to send a text, you can call or text 312-981-7200. I've seen a former Miss Wisconsin eat a Limburger cheese and slice onion sandwich. 630 area code says, "Thanks, Nick. I'm wide awake now because I'm trying not to vomit." Tom from Bartlett says, "Google bacon explosion. Not sure of the origin, but who cares? I guarantee you will make it." Did you Google bacon explosion?
That I did. It is a pork dish that consists of bacon wrapped around a filling of spiced sausage and crumbled bacon. The American football-sized dish is smoked or baked. It's massive. It just looks like, it's just kind of like bacon loaf.
Bacon explosion.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Not good for the heart.
I would not. You think anything called bacon explosion, I think you could probably figure out it's not the best thing for you.
Sounds like a cause of death.
Bacon explosion. All right, how about this? Out of Texas, deep fried butter. Nothing embodies the true extravagance of Texas quite like the array of fried food found at the Texas State Fair. For 3 weeks in October, Texans can indulge in artery-clogging cuisines such as fried Oreos, fried Twinkies, deep-fried Jell-O. Deep-fried Jell-O? What? But in 2009, Abel Gonzalez, king of all fried foods at the fair, concocted a way to just straight-up deep-fry butter. By freezing a slab of butter and wrapping it in biscuit dough, the dairy melts into the dough as it enters the fryer, creating a similar taste to the butteriest piece of toast that you've ever had. The concoction became so popular that after Gonzalez won the most creative Big Tex Choice Award, Oprah Winfrey visited the booth in Dallas to try some of it herself. Vendors continue to try to outdo each other with more and more ridiculous fried food creations, but deep-fried butter will forever be lauded as the pinnacle of grossly indulgent Texas State food fare. How about this? Out of Utah, Jell-O salad. Here we go again.
Okay.
Utah's relationship with Jell-O is sprawling and complicated, but basically Mormons love to bring it to big church gatherings. A nice slice of the jiggly stuff is fine, totally fine, but Utah goes over the line here. Like a bored 1950s housewife with a banging new copy of Good Housekeeping, they still make Jell-O salads. Like Jell-O with fruits and vegetables floating around inside. So they're still enjoying it.
The dream of the 50s is alive in Utah.
Yeah. Vermont, they enjoy raw milk.
So just unpasteurized?
If there's one area in which Vermonters take their love of all things local, organic, and nauseatingly farm to table too far, it's drinking unpasteurized baby sustenance from a wrinkled cow udder. Listen, we're all for getting back to Mother Nature, but maybe dying and diarrhea from E. coli are some of the better things that are left to the pre-industrial era. It gets gnarlier than a barefoot, dreaded deadhead on this third day of a festival.
Really giving Vermont a hard time here.
Yeah. Virginia, Brunswick stew. Inherently, there's nothing really gross about this hearty, delicious stew of veggies and meat. It's the perfect meal for adaptability, and adapt is apparently what people did when the northern flying squirrel became endangered, causing cooks to resort to chicken and rabbit, whatever else they can get. So that's actually the Brunswick stew is actually like the endangered flying squirrel.
Nice.
Washington, geoduck. Yes, at some point, some beachcomber wandered the shores of the Pacific and spotted what appeared to be a gigantic penis clamped to a clamshell. Yeah, I'm going to have to eat that, he said. Have you ever seen these things?
No.
Now, what the weird thing is, it's like it looks just ridiculous. But when you actually clean it out, it's about the size. Basically, it's like a scallop. Once you get all the stuff, you know, get rid of it. But yeah, it's basically a scallop.
Is it good? Is it tasty like a scallop?
I've never tasted one. But I've seen it on on the Food Networks there. Washington, U Street Taco. The nation's capital is a bit shorthanded when it comes to foods that are truly native to its borders. Only the half smoke made famous by Ben's Chili Bowl probably being the most noteworthy. Well, a few years ago, the enterprising folks at the Washington City Paper gave D.C. a horrifying late-night Frankenfood to call its own. taking one of said half smokes and wrapping it in a jumbo slice. Trying too hard, kind of gross, definitely. But that's what you're going to eat in D.C. after a night of drinking. West Virginia fried squirrel. While the squirrel is hardly uniquely West Virginian, these rats with better PR have a bit of culinary cachet in some Appalachian communities. West Virginia has a more casual attitude towards consumption of certain types of critters than most states, as evidenced by the annual West Virginia Roadkill Cook-Off, which does not mandate actual roadkill be used. But whether said squirrel was dispatched with a gun or a car, just something off-putting about consuming America's most prevalent bushy-tailed tree dweller. Wisconsin, the Butterburger. Let's just get this one out of the way. A Butterburger absolutely does not taste bad. How could it with that name? But in a state perhaps best known for its dairy-related excesses, shouldn't there be some kind of limit? There's definitely a moment when you're digging into your traditional Butterburger at Sally's when you notice melted butter pooling on the plate below you and pause to question every life decision that led you to that point. But don't pause long enough to stop eating the burger because it's covered in butter. But you'll still get a little grossed out. That Steak and Shake Butterburger commercial, ridiculous.
It's heavenly.
It is. It just makes me drool every single time I see that. Every single time. And then finally, Wyoming, the chuck wagon breakfast. Now, it's not really that gross. Wyoming folks eat pretty well. It's just a big old breakfast cooked over a fire, cowboy style, beans, eggs, the whole shebang. The word chuck wagon reminds us of an old dog food commercials, and the whole experience can really be screwed up by flies or coyotes or whatever the hell is in Wyoming. All right. There you go. All right, we're going to break here for some weather, and then we're going to talk about real mascots that people inexplicably thought were a good idea. So, everybody hang on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran will have your morning drive at 6. It's Tuesday. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Wrapping that up in a little bit here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So we have here 11 real mascots people inexplicably thought were a good idea. This is from Cracked.com. Mascots are fun time costume freaks with simple jobs. Endorse an associated product, crudely personify a broad concept, or distract people from the boring parts of sports. So under absolutely no circumstance should a mascot come with 20 backflips of controversy. And yet, here we go. The NHL hired Stan Lee to make a bunch of knockoff superheroes. Lots of people love superheroes, and lots of Canadian people love hockey. So in 2011, the NHL figured that they would hire none other than Stan Lee to come up with 30 brand new superhero mascots, one for each of the teams in the league. It sounds like a lot of work. So instead, Lee figured he could borrow from some of the heroes he's already brought into the world. And by borrow, we mean he ripped off his famous comic book characters so brazenly that it would even make Deadpool wince. The Guardian Project was comprised of many superheroes who, for legal reasons, definitely not related to any existing Marvel products. But Lee didn't only borrow from his own comic book empire, he also took a few trips down the DC lane. The unholy combination of Magneto and Mr. Freeze. These things look weird.
Yeah. I don't even remember this. Like, this is pretty recent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember. I'm a hardcore hockey fan, and the marketing stunt was a disaster, with fan backlash so severe that the NHL quietly pulled the superhero roster and scrubbed the website clean of any reference. Yet despite suffering a disaster of Infinity War proportions, the company continued milking investors for money, promising that this League of the Extraordinary copyright violations would get their own superhero movie, which was a super lie and got them super sued to the tune of $500,000.
The Blackhawk one is really lame, too.
What is he? Is he called the Blackhawk?
Yeah, he's just called the Blackhawk, and he's kind of like an Iron Man dude. He's got, like, I don't know, phasers coming out of his hands, and his description is, big-shouldered friend of the Windy City, controls the element of wind.
Come on.
He just shoots wind out of his hands.
Come on. Ugh. Got a text from the lovely Kristen Decker.
Oh, wow.
And she says, I got a mascot for you, the Corn Jerker from Hoopston, Illinois. H-O-O-P-E-S-T-O-N. Why don't you Google that? The Corn Jerker. That's from the lovely Kristen Decker. I miss Kristen.
She's the one who trained me.
She did?
Yeah, taught me everything I know.
Oh. All right. Well, there you go. What's the Corn Jerker?
Well, it's just a... it appears to just be a corn man with pretty bad bangs. The corn... I think it's just the name, really.
That's probably what
it is. Corn Jerkers.
Yeah. I was looking at some of these other Stan Lee created things. The Maple Leaf was one of the superheroes. All right. Here's the next one here. The UEFA's boy mascot shares a name with a giant sex toy. When the people in charge of the 2016 Euro Cup were looking for a mascot, they went with the most wholesome image they could think of, a tiny boy with a superhero costume who loved to play soccer. What better way to celebrate pure sport and make a lot of money at the merch stand for impressionable kiddies? After high-fiving themselves until their hands were chafed, the UEFA board then let fans decide what the mascot's name, giving them three options: Golix, Driblu, or Super Victor. Fans logically went for the name that didn't sound like a bad pun and chose Super Victor. But nobody at UEFA was smart enough to Google the name with the safe search disabled because they realized that the toy name Super Victor is not the kind of toys that loved to play soccer. Super Victor was a very popular, reasonably priced sex toy. After causing way too many awkward conversations between parents and young soccer fans, they admitted their mistake and reaffirmed that the sex aids are not produced by UEFA. European soccer would never associate with something that doesn't go limp and start flopping around at the slightest touch. A little shocked.
Wow.
Freeburg Community High School refuses to get rid of the midget. No, you got to be kidding me, right?
Yeah. No, that's real. That's 100% real.
That's unbelievable. School pride means never giving up, even when you have the upper hand. After all, that just makes you the scrappy underdog fighting for all the little people. Why shouldn't your school mascot symbolize the eternal David and Goliath struggle? Because high schools are full of stupid people. That's why the mascot at Freeburg Community High School in Illinois. Oh, it's Illinois too. Isn't just a little person, but a big-headed, silly-mustachioed, severely beaten little person In fact, the school is so proud of this caricature, it's the first thing you see when you visit the website. This thing is unbelievable. But what makes Freeburg High special is that it didn't learn its lesson. In 2015, a major backlash hit the school when the Little People of America presented them with a petition to change the mascot. Amazingly, the town stuck with their many guns that we assume they have stockpiled in their trailers. The school rejected the heartfelt petition to cheers from the sweaty Freeburg crowd, claiming that when someone messes with something like tradition, you decide something's worth fighting for instead of letting it go. And there's no greater American tradition than small folks being closed-minded, embarrassments to the rest of the country. That's really unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see this thing. I mean, I don't even understand. Is it still the mascot?
I'm trying to find out. Even hold out.
No, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Marijuana activists have their own child-friendly mascot. The battle for marijuana legalization has long been tough, and has been long and tough. So to win many hearts and minds as possible, one weed advocacy group created Buddy. A superhero mascot which would tour colleges and bars to raise awareness for the good times of weed. And if you don't see why that's a terrible idea, you've smoked too much Buddy. Buddy was introduced in 2015 to help raise awareness in Ohio right before an important legalization vote. And at no point did the folks in charge consider that maybe a campaign for a drug shouldn't have a kid-friendly cartoon mascot to make it look like smoking weed turns you into a superhero. Many people, including children's advocates and other marijuana activists, attacked Buddy, but even compared him to Joe Camel, the one-time cartoon mascot for tobacco. But the creators refused to back down, claiming he was great. He was a great contribution to weed activism. Sadly, that pep and cheer was for naught, as Ohio failed to legalize marijuana in 2015. And if you're looking for anyone to blame, there's a 6-foot Brussels sprout in a Superman costume that you could probably point a finger at.
And Freeburg Community High School, still called the Midgets. Oh. Go to their website right now.
That's unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
Unbelievable. All right, we're going to take a break here, and we got the news coming up, and then we'll talk more mascots here on 720 WGN.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. Werewolves of London.
Yeah. And my dad requested that.
Another fantastic request.
Yeah. Two for Tuesday.
Yeah, man, two for Tuesday.
Little Warren Zevon. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and then the great Steve Cochran at 6. And we are talking about unfortunate mascots. And I happen to have a weakness for mascots. They just make me laugh. I don't know. I have no idea. You know, for instance, the sausage race at Miller Park is one of my favorite things on earth. And now the president's race in Washington with stupid costumes. Oh my God. I'm trying to remember. I always forget the name of this player. He ended up on the Cubs. He wasn't on the Cubs at the time. Somebody will remember. He wasn't on the Cubs at the time, but he actually smacked one of the sausages with a baseball bat when they were running by. He actually smacked one of them with a baseball
bat. Was it Randall Simon?
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I got that whispered into my ear. I could not tell who it was, but I'm going to say it was Bob Fukuda. I think Bob's here.
Yeah. Rat was. It was that, a nice job. Yeah, that was who it was. This was before he was a Cub. But he smacked one of the sausages. They were running past the dugout. And he went boom, and he hit it with a baseball bat. And it was a woman in the costume too.
Oh
yeah, yeah.
Oh, geez. that's a bad look.
I think he got fined, if I'm not mistaken. I think he got fined and disciplined, smacking a mascot with a baseball bat. All right, how about this one? The Amarillo Sox mascot has a very suspicious bulge. Being a mascot for a team called the Sox is a curse. Not only does it mean that you have to do cartwheels for minimum wage while dressed as a sweaty sock, but there are so many Sox out there that there's hardly any way to stand out from the mascot crowd. But one team found an answer to that non-problem, and the result was a massive poke in the eye. When the new Texas Amarillo Sox mascot was unveiled in 2011, fans were shocked that he had a big, stiff stocking. Yes, designers had given him a huge bulge at a 90-degree angle right at crotch level. And by the way, this thing is ridiculous.
Someone needs to get fired.
It's just ridiculous. Even the team itself admitted that it looked like a banana with a with an erection. General manager Mark Lee quickly nixed it, saying, "I'm watching 25 to 30 little kids having a ball with him, and their parents are sitting there thinking something else." The team quickly auctioned off the costume on eBay to one lucky fetishist, and have since moved on to become the Texas Air Hogs. We're too frightened to look up what that mascot looks like. I love that they auctioned off the costume. What? What does that even mean? Here's one. The Japanese Sun Wolves mascot looks like a nightmarish werewolf monster. This thing is terrifying. Tom, have you seen this thing?
Yeah, because that's the rugby team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to watch a little bit of Japanese rugby on the side. And
it's terrifying. It's, this thing is really frightening.
Well, the Japanese are, mascot culture,
as you know,
it's huge over there. Yeah. And usually they're like generally pretty lovable, and this thing is...
this is nightmare-inducing.
Yeah, it's like from The Howling.
In intimidation is an important strategy in rugby, the only sport that lets teams perform warrior battle chants to terrify their opponents into surrendering. So it would make sense for their mascots that aren't the mascots aren't pushovers either. But one Japanese team may have taken that mentality a bit too far, choosing a mascot who looks like he just tore the neck out of a bunny rabbit. In 2016, Japan's rugby team, the Sun Wolves, chose a wolf as their mascot, one whose costume looks less like something worn by Michael J. Fox and more like something worn by a deranged serial killer. The mascot is so terrifying that fans avoided the supposed ambassador of cheer, and children were too scared to even take pictures with him. Fortunately, this nightmare spirit from a Norse folktale only lasted for one season, when the fans' unanimous hatred of it convinced the team to give the wolf a makeover, resulting in a more happy-looking cartoon pal, Wolvie. This thing is really terrifying. No way that would work. Let's see. Alfredo DeDark says, "Great show as always. The mascot for Polo, Illinois is the Marcos." That's right. Polo Marcos.
It's getting a thumbs down.
Yeah. The Prince Albert Raiders have an inexplicably racist mascot. I'm looking at this thing, too. These are just not good. I don't know. People need to be fired. With a team name like Prince Albert Raiders, The possibilities for a mascot are nearly endless. There's the royal angle. There's the pirate angle. There's even the budget-friendly guy in a tin can angle. You know the other angle. But for some reason, the Saskatchewan junior hockey team decided that all of those were a bit too obvious, and they went for something a bit more of the left field, an Arabic stereotype. In 2014, the Raiders introduced Riley, a cartoonish-looking headscarf-wearing Middle Eastern guy. And why would an all-white Canadian hockey team called the Raiders have this as their mascot? According to them, it wasn't meant to be offensive, but to pay homage to their original mascot, or even more blatant Arab stereotype. Unsurprisingly, this was met with a huge backlash from everyone. The team quickly pulled the mascot and reintroduced Riley the Raider as more of a cartoon dude who's friendly and silly, whose favorite hobbies include, quote, dog walking at the SPCA and hugs.
What?
He's into hugs.
Yeah, nothing says, you know, I'm a Raider. I like hugs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when, you know, they take their hockey very seriously up there, man. Oh, my God, is this thing offensive. I'm looking at another. Yeah. They've got two different pictures of it. How did they even get away with it?
Man, I don't know. It was, just, I guess, a different time at one point. Oh. They said it's a reference to their original mascot.
Yeah. Well,
man.
All right. How about this? The Richland High mascot is a mushroom cloud. Mascots are for everything. Mascots are for everything. Sports teams, stores, annual events. That time America dropped nuclear bombs on two cities and killed hundreds of thousands of civilians. Everything. The people of Richmond, Washington are still very proud of their contributions to the Manhattan Project, and nowhere is that more obvious than in their high school's team, the Richland Bombers. Apparently, the specter of humanity's annihilation is something the school is so keen on that they will put a mushroom cloud on about everything. Some alumni have even tattooed the mushroom cloud on their arms, which must lead to many proud conversations at bars convincing women that no, they don't have a tattoo of a fart. It's an actual celebration of mass murder. Oh, man. Yeah, this is quite the logo.
I just feel lucky. Like, our mascot was the Tigers. That was it.
Yeah,
had mushroom clouds.
We were the high school. We were the Wildcats.
Nice.
I once was Willie the Wildcat.
You were a mascot?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they immediately regretted that they let me in the costume. Because, like, during the actual football game, I actually ran out onto the field.
Oh.
And I interfered, and I was knocking things out. I was, like, knocking Cokes out of people's hands and stuff like that. And let me explain something to you. First of all, Willie the Wildcat costume needed to be laundered. It was disgusting. But yeah, they totally regretted. They were like, "Get DeGilio, get off the field. What are you doing?"
Oh man.
Yeah. So yeah, I was Willie the Wildcat for one day. Not even a full game. I think they were like, "Get off the field. Take off the costume. You do not deserve to be Willie the Wildcat."
I can just see, like, what were you, like 15 or something? 15, 16?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I think
I was a sophomore, so I was 15, I think, when I did it. But yeah, it was, you know, they immediately were like, oh, this guy just definitely did not deserve to be Willie the Wildcat. So, all right, more mascot weirdness following. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Let's break for the weather here.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I to know?
Warren Zevon, man. The best. As my dad requesting that on Two for Tuesday, wrapping it up here. I'm at Two for Tuesday. A little Warren Zevon for you on a Tuesday morning. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on 720 WGN. Okay, we've been talking about weird and goofy, terrible mascots. This next one. an Italian company stole the worst-looking mascot of all time. As this article has repeatedly shown, not everyone's up to the simple task of designing a mascot, so theft could be a real issue. But leave it to the people too dumb to think that their own googly-eyed idiot to steal a mascot has ever graced the inside of a stadium. Meet Gabibbo, the mascot for one of Italy's biggest media companies. In a lot of ways, it nails the perfect mix of being utterly nondescript yet unsettling at the same time, like something a dermatologist surgically removed from Barney's the dinosaur's back. And this abomination wasn't even an original idea. The company stole the look from another bug-eyed blood clot from across the world, Western Kentucky University's Big Red. Big Red, he's one of my favorite mascots.
He's a good one.
Big Red's one of my favorite mascots. And this is a total ripoff of Big Red. When Western Kentucky University found out the Italian media stallion had stolen their idea, the creators outright admitted this was the case. A 15-year court battle in 15 years that almost went sideways in 2018 when the courts decided to do a dumb red blob that a dumb red blob is too generic to copyright. But when an Italian court rebooted the lawsuit, meaning WKU still had a chance to collect a whopping $250 million in damages, which is about $250 million more than this doofy tomato of a mascot would ever have earned them. Oh, man. How about Jerome, the Manitoba garden gnome? Put a friendly smile on mass layoffs. In late 2018, a clerk eager to boost morale amongst Manitoba government employees pulled a move that would make Michael Scott proud. Fred Meyer introduced Jerome G. Gnome, a ceramic garden gnome, which he photographed visiting scenic locations. It was all so cute, Meyer even wrote the Providence's executive council an email as Jerome, which opened with the line that read like a variant of the Nigerian prince scam aimed at hobbits. I come from a long line of gnomes who have been featured in European myths and legends. The government immediately fell in love. They made Jerome the elderly imp of their unofficial mascot, right in time to cheer up all those workers whose jobs were just threatened. That's right, Jerome G. Gnome didn't bring people cobbled shoes or neat gardens, but mass firings. Right after the Gnome campaign, Manitoba left its government employees in the cold by letting a vital no-layoffs clause lapse. So while Jerome was seeing the sights on the taxpayers' dime, the government pledged to cut 1,200 jobs, leaving those hardworking employees with a lot more free time to spend at Gnome. See you there. Wow.
Jeez. Said Manitoba?
Manitoba.
That's a bad look for the government of Manitoba.
The Amherst College mascot is a British colonel who advocated for the genocide of Native Americans. My God.
Good job, everyone.
America has had more than a few sports teams that have disrespected Native Americans by using them as mascots, but one liberal arts school found the perfect way to counter that trend. Why not make cute mascots out of the people who tried to wipe natives off the face of the earth instead? Amherst, Massachusetts shared its name with Lord Jeffrey Amherst, a colonial military commander who conquered the land that would become New France and helped shape early North America. But scroll half down an inch into his Wikipedia page and you'll see that Lord Jeff is better known for being a white supremacist who hatched plans on how to best wipe Native Americans off the face of the country and helped seal them from seal the deal from them. In a 1763 letter, he wrote, "You will do well to try to inoculate the Indians by means of blankets, as well as they try every other method where we can serve to get rid of this race. It's a tricky catchphrase, but then Lord Jeff was their mascot. That's just not...
Yeah. That needed a rethink at some point.
Yeah. A lot of these need rethinks. Finally, in 2016, Amherst students spoke out, and the college agreed to remove all association with the genocidal colonizer, instead choosing a woolly mammoth as their new as their new mascot.
Turnaround.
Hopefully, somebody vetted his Facebook page first to make sure that the mammoth was not a murderous racist. These are tricky times. I think you'd be safe with a woolly mammoth.
Yeah. They are extinct, but, you know.
Yeah. They seem decent enough.
Really cuddly.
Cuddly little woolly mammoth. Yeah, you know, the mascot, my favorite mascot, is Tommy Hawk.
Great mascot.
He's fantastic. And, very entertaining at Hawks games. And always been a fan of Tommy Hawk.
But Gritty.
Well, Gritty's the man. Gritty is the best. He brought such life to the world. It's hard to believe he's only been around one season.
Right? It just seems like he came out of absolutely nowhere.
The thing about it is, you know, Flyers fans hate him. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's Philadelphia. They hate everything in Philadelphia. They threw batteries at Santa Claus in Philadelphia. So I think Gritty's fantastic. I have a bobblehead in the office of Gritty that a listener got for me. And I treasure it. But yeah, as soon as he showed up, people were just like, "What?" Couldn't believe Gritty. John Oliver, by the way, is obsessed with Gritty.
Oh yeah.
Which is just makes that delights me to no end.
What's your take on Clark the Cub?
Can't stand him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the no pants thing.
Put some pants on. Do you remember when they first unveiled Clark?
Oh yeah.
And there were a couple of like TV stations that actually showed Clark with the thing.
Oh yeah. I know one of them was Comcast Sportsnet or something. Yeah, it was definitely Comcast.
Yeah.
And they was like, "Come on." How do you not notice that?
Yeah.
What intern did you get to do this?
Not good. All right. Well, there you go, everybody. Enjoy your mascots. By the way, tomorrow on the show, Wes Parker, who is the author of the Kaiju Survival Guide, which we all need because Friday Godzilla comes out. We'll also have Wildcard Wednesday, and then we'll do another round of Know Your Onion. So that's coming up on the show tomorrow.